Hello and welcome to another episode of the Untapped Podcast. I'm your host, Paul. Like attacking with four signal pests, this is take 12. Joining me tonight, it's Kaz.
I like the four.
Oh yeah, that works, okay. I'm really slow. Let me see. Like casting Postmortem Lunge. Okay, wait, no.
All
no,
right.
It starts differently.
Why did we start with Kaz?
Because Ed was going to read off a page of information.
We're saving this
right.
Episode 6.
Start again from the beginning, because we're already gone this deep.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Untapped Podcast. I'm your host, Paul, and like attacking with four signal pests, this is take 12. Joining me tonight is Goodspeed.
Oh, wait, oh god. Okay. At least if I can remember this. It involves visions of brutality. So, alright. Hear me out.
I'm listening.
So. I have... What are we on, 12? So I have four creatures in play, right? I don't care what they are. I have four creatures in play. My opponent has one creature in play. I enchant it with visions of brutality, right, from Oath of the Gatewatch. I cast Arcbound, targeting that creature, and then I Lightning Bolt it. And my opponent takes 12.
Also joining me tonight is Ed.
Mine also involves Lightning Bolt. Funny enough that we had a conversation about Lightning Bolt earlier. Mine also involves some setup. Ready? So we're playing on Modo, and it's the time of Born of the Gods, okay?
Oh,
on the field is a Dictate of the Twin Gods. You cast Lightning Bolt at your opponent,
I think
carefully casts Deflecting Palm.
I think that was a Journey card.
Okay, it's Journey. Who carefully casts Deflecting Palm, and because it's Modo, and because it's still during the Journey time period before this was patched, it only deals 12 back at you. Instead of 24 like it's supposed to.
So you're the one taking 12?
No, I think I think it is supposed to be 12.
Sorry, it deals 12 back to you correctly. Instead of dealing 6 like it was supposed to. So we did this after the patch.
I don't know if
and I doubled things wrong.
I don't know if deflecting palm hits spells.
Yes, it does.
I thought it only hit creature damage.
Nope,
it hits sources of damage.
Damage to you.
Oh well. Okay, sure. I can see that.
It does work, but this is post-patch, apparently.
Yeah, because pre-patch it would only be 6 damage,
I think.
Yeah. It didn't double the fucking palm damage or something like that.
Modo problems.
And right. Thanks to Conley Woods.
First world Modo problems.
Twin gods.
And last but not least, joining us tonight, it's Kaz.
Special guest.
So,
Kaz.
In honor of Innistrad, shows their Innistrad coming out, I really like Devils. They're kind of sexy. So,
So
take 12, like casting a Vexing Devil and an opponent obviously taking 4 off the Vexing Devil on turn 1 because they're not an idiot. And then later having,
Deals 3 to you?
No, it deals 4.
Oh my god, that's so good.
Yeah, I know, it's great. And later you have a Flare of the Hatebound on the battlefield and you cast Postmortem Lunge, which lets you cast Vexing Devil out of your graveyard for a single mana. And they take the 4 from Vexing Devil, and also it would have haste, so if they don't take the 4, it would just attack for 4. And because of Flare of the Hatebound, it deals 4 damage to them. Because Flare of the Hatebound says, whenever another creature enters the battlefield from your graveyard, that creature deals damage equal to its power to target creature or player.
So like that, take 12.
Yeah, but I have another one, too. So that was from a standard deck I really wanted to make at the time. But this one is using the new card Devil's Playground.
Oh, God.
So, no, this one's not that complicated. So you just use Devil's Playground to get 4 Devils, and then you play Hellrider and attack for 12. It's that simple.
Oh, I like that one. That was very elegant.
Yeah, and it's got Hellrider in it, which makes it awesome. And if you want to deal 16, you could wrap the board afterwards.
Do you know what else you could do? You could, like, Ultimate Cough and tap 3 mountains. Is it 4 mountains? I actually don't know how much they do.
I believe you would have to tap 12 mountains.
12 mountains, guys.
Still entirely possible.
Tap 12 mountains.
In my mono red ramp deck.
Oh, okay.
I guess that went as good as expected.
It's So you guys been following along with the conspiracy announcements?
Yeah, it's dumb.
I've been pretty amused, actually.
I liked it until the third time, and then the third time I'm like, this is stupid.
No, the third time was what sells it. The third time is... I knew they were going to go for a third.
I knew the first time, I didn't know. Like, I legitimately took it at face value because I wasn't prepared.
The first time is conspiracy Brago's circus.
No, it's conspiracy Reign of Brago, right?
That's what I said. Yeah. Brago goes to the mall.
Whatever.
And Brago's so, day out.
I legitimately believed...
So you're not appearing in this film?
You're already ruining the plot twist. So I legitimately believe this was the set or whatever. And then later they released, like, oh no, Brago's been assassinated.
Yeah. Aaron Forsythe tweeted that basically Brago was going to die.
With some ethereal
and the next day
ritual dagger.
They changed the announcement to conspiracy, the empty throne. And they had a picture of a lady stabbing Brago with a pink knife.
In the neck.
Isn't Brago a geist?
Yes. That's why it had to be pink.
It's, yeah.
It's like Oblivion. You had to use the silver weapons to hit the ghosts.
Oh, I get it now. The knife was pink. This makes so much sense.
Uh-huh.
I just needed to know that it was pink.
Yeah, and it was clever, and they had the 221 crossed out. Goes down to 220 because Brago's dead and he's no longer in the set. Yeah, I thought it was cool.
But then,
at that moment, I noticed they didn't have a set symbol, so I was already ruined, like, oh, it's going to happen again because they haven't released the set symbol yet. I'm like, okay, that's stupid.
Your long experience playing Mario games should have told you it had to happen a third time.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
So,
you know, the best Mario game, Mario Sunshine, breaks the three times rule.
Oh, God.
That was the best Mario game.
Just does it eight times instead.
I loved that game.
The problem with that game is that the camera controls left, right, inverted.
That game was so good.
Deal with it.
I can't.
People hate that game.
Your brain can...
They only hate it because of that reason.
You didn't care enough.
If I played it on an emulator and I uninverted the controls manually, I could play it.
You didn't play it long enough.
I mean, that's true. If
your brain
should
be flexible enough to account for it.
I didn't play it till I was like 24 or 23.
Your brain is definitely flexible and capable of doing it.
I was 24 9 months ago.
What you're saying really is I'm unwilling to attempt to play an inverted game.
I shouldn't have to.
For what it's worth, I agree with that. I am unwilling to play a game I can't play.
It should
play.
Just be an option in the menu. I could turn it on and off, and it'd be done.
It was really good. It taught you to learn to play Southpaw.
To play what?
I'm not Southpaw.
Oh. Are we Rocky?
Yeah, it taught you that brightly colored sludge is evil.
Yes. Southpaw is not the same thing as an inverted head.
I know.
Okay, well, we just ran with it, so it's okay. But yes, sticky goo can be cleaned with water.
Yeah, so to cure pollution in the world that ails us, you just gotta make it rain.
Yes, just get water from the fountains and pour on everything.
It's actually really a poor statement on teaching kids how to deal with oil spills, because you really do need to have Dawn soap. You need to have an oil to mix with an oil to make things go away. So clearly this was water-based.
Or you could just have, like, an oil-eating bacteria.
Everybody knows fat Italian plumbers are terrible at cleaning up oil spills.
I loved it. It was different. It was cool. Flood
was
great.
It was so weird. And it was
so
great.
It was between two other great Mario games.
It also... Yeah, all the 3D Mario games are great.
That's probably true.
The iterations of them. Mario Galaxy 2, I mean, it was good.
Mario Galaxy 2 was uninspired because you'd seen everything before.
It was more of the first game.
But it was good.
But it was good.
But we did like the first game.
You could just staple it to the first game and call it Super Mario Galaxies, and it would have been great.
Yeah.
It's to collect giant vitamin C tablets.
Like, it's just like, with Yoshi was Mario 2.
Because he's going to throw a bottle at me.
Doesn't help that I hate the Mario series.
What were we talking about?
Yeah, how did we get here?
Conspiracy.
Also, Goodspeed, the fuck is wrong with you?
I'm not good at platforming.
Okay, now I understand.
And all those games are, so I don't enjoy them.
Isn't Super Mario Sunshine also, was that the first time we saw Dark Mario? Where, like, they had the thing where, like, he would follow you while you're going through the courses, so if you ever fell behind, you're fucked.
Is that distinct from
Mario?
I thought you chased him.
No,
yeah.
He was chasing you.
Every single level had a mission where you would chase. It was really Bowser Jr., but he was dressed as, like, Shadow Mario.
Yeah. Oh, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm remembering it wrong.
And, you know, it's not...
It was the advent of Bowser Jr.
It's really not the first time we've seen that, because you also chase the giant penguin in Super Mario 64.
Do-do-do-do.
You threw its head off a cliff. That's all I know about that game.
That's also true.
It happened every time.
The sliding levels were fun. I like
and frustrating.
So,
stop
after
throwing your bottle over there.
I don't know what you're talking about. I threw it at Paul.
After Conspiracy the Empty Throne, we got another tweet from Wizards of the Coast
that basically
said that the people...
Yes, me personally.
Yeah. At Untapped Click on Twitter was tweeted by
LSV.
Wizards Magic or whatever.
If LSV responds to us before responding to me about my deck, I'm going to be really sad.
He did!
He responded to me.
He responded?
Goodspeed asked him if he could get a code for Eternal, and LSV was like, yeah!
No. He said no. Basically his response.
Wait, what?
He was like, fuck you, just go play like a normal person, and I was like, I already did that.
What did you ask?
So his game company is releasing a new card game, and I applied to be a beta tester for it.
Oh.
And so I tweeted at him being like, hey, can I get a promo code? And then he was like, yeah, just apply like everyone else. And I was like, fuck, fine.
What's the point of me asking you personally if I just have to be a regular person?
No, I'm sure I'll get in. Honestly. But, no, that's going to be fun. It looks a lot like Hearthstone.
It looks exactly like Hearthstone.
Yeah.
Which was we'll exactly
as
like
someone
Magic.
Who doesn't play Hearthstone, I guess I should say.
So it looks exactly like Force of Will?
No.
which, yeah.
Force of Will is a card game.
Oh,
Hearthstone's a little oval game.
So...
We've changed it so much by changing the shape.
Little doilies.
Well, it's just Eternal has the same oval shape.
Do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make a game that's exactly the same that has stars.
Ooh.
You're going to really have to make the artwork
for that.
What
are you going to call it?
You can throw them.
What are you going to call it?
Astral.
No. Like...
Eternal.
Yeah. Vintage. Speaking of which, when we were in Cedarburg...
Limited.
There was a wine shop called Vintage that Paul and I also... We mused about being able to play Vintage at.
They have the Black Lotus wine. It's like blackberry flavored.
I know, it was going to be so good.
Wait, do they actually?
No.
Oh.
They had a wine shop called
I'm
Vintage,
really disappointed.
Actually.
Well, I knew that. That's obvious.
We just immediately made the connection
it's
to
a very
Magic
obvious
the
name.
Gathering cards.
We also laughed how in the future maybe there would be a shop that would be called Vintage where you could play Vintage at while drinking your Vintage. So you could have some Vintage while you Vintage.
Would it be enough
it's
of
like
a reason?
Monarchy called Legacy.
You have to add a third Vintage on there for me to be interested. There's got to be a third source of Vintage.
There's lots of
hipsters.
Us being old.
Yes.
You said like vintage furniture and
yeah,
you're
no,
out
you can
there.
Listen to records.
No, you guys, we can listen to FLAC files. Because this is going to be like 30 years in the future.
FLAC files of records. All little pops and hisses. And
oh, 30 years
actual
in the future.
Vinyl.
Was it?
No. Just a message.
Hey, Ed. Jesus here, just texting you to let you know that God loves you.
But Ed's being really annoying. He's telling me I have to fuck Mary Magdalene. What an asshole.
Once again, what are we talking about?
I thought we were talking about Conspiracy,
but it's
really not going well.
It was pretty obvious to me there was going to be a third one, just because they did this on a Wednesday, and they always announce things on Friday, as far as my memory says.
Like Vintage, Eternal Masters last week.
Right. I was like, they're probably something on Friday, just because it's Friday and they announce things then. So I was like, yeah, there'll probably be a third one tomorrow.
I think there's a song like, 18 on a Wednesday.
Feeling good on a Wednesday. It's from South Park.
Feeling good on a Wednesday.
That's the Lord episode of South Park.
Lord. I am Lord. Yeah.
I loved that episode.
So did Lord.
Probably.
No, she did. She had an interview. I watched it on YouTube. There was an interview. Apparently before all of her concerts now, she and her group just sing like, Lord.
Yeah.
I am Lord. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like part of their vocal warm-up. It's hilarious.
So, basically, Conspiracy the Empty Throne suddenly became... Everyone was interested in getting the throne. and they announced Conspiracy, take the throne.
Isn't that the same as having just an empty throne that would convey the same message?
No, there's an art of a woman putting the crown on.
Yeah, it's Marchesa.
Yeah, but the empty throne sounds like a much cooler
like
set name than take the throne.
The internet said it was Marchesa.
I don't think that's necessarily wrong in the end, but the art didn't look like Marchesa.
Okay.
Did we just say that Marchesa's gonna be in this again?
Of course she will.
Yeah, it takes place in the
same
plane. We
know that I love Marchesa the Black Rose.
That now she's got a different colored rose.
What is the plane?
It better not be white.
I think it's green.
It's the Renaissance?
You know what? I'm okay if it's green because I put her in green card sleeves.
This is the Assassin's Creed 3 plane.
Basically.
What is...
If Assassin's Creed 3 had goblins in wheelchairs.
Oh, you mean Derebi? Doretti? What's his name?
Doretti.
Are you Doretti to move on from Conspiracy?
Sure. What do you got for me?
What do I have? Not much. I have that draft I did that Kaz was talking about. That draft that was just absurdly good.
So you were drafting what?
Well, so... Paul and I discovered recently that we independently of each other made untapped quick accounts on Moto with different names.
Yeah, that's confusing the shit out of me.
So, I made a click... Jesus. Alright. I made an account named Untapped Click with the same, you know, spelling and punctuation elements as our email, untappedclick@gmail.com, and our Twitter, @untappedclick on Twitter. And, of course, Goodspeed's like, oh, I also made an Untapped Click account.
And he was probably surprised to find that Untapped Click was taken.
No, I didn't even try. I just put the underscore.
You immediately went for the underscore. Yeah. I like the underscore version better.
I don't. Underscores are ugly.
Do you know what you should do? You should be VSL underscore on top click.
Vintage Super League?
That would be kind of funny, actually.
So when you get invited to the VSL, you already have one.
I was thinking about possibly. Because
then your name would be VSL underscore VSL underscore on top click. But I would laugh so hard.
I don't know. I haven't actually spent the money on Vintage yet, which is probably a sign I'm not going to.
You've thought about it a significant amount, which is probably a sign that you will.
I think a lot of stupid shit.
In the same way that I've thought about purchasing foil wastes recently.
I thought about buying Ibugets.
That's actually just a poor investment.
How many eyes does Ugin have?
Shut up.
Apparently four.
One.
He's a Cyclops spirit dragon?
I'm okay with that. I doubt he'd kill him.
Oh, that was so good.
Oh, Ugin. I got ultimated by Ugin today. It was very frustrating.
What?
I was playing on tap. I was testing my Nissa Tarka.
Okay, alright.
I just couldn't. Actually, I think that was the game where I audibled into Colorless because I already played in person once that day and I didn't want to play Tarka Red again. So I was playing Colorless and then he just, like, I couldn't get to Ugin and he ultimated and I was just like, you know what? This is dumb. I don't know.
How dumb was it?
It was as dumb as the current candidates for the Republican nomination. Hey!
I don't... Except for Trump, I don't think that they are necessarily dumb.
No, they are. They're all fools.
I think you can be intelligent and a fool.
I guess I don't know enough to say that, but...
Where are my deck picks?
What does that mean? Also, if you change one letter in that,
like,
it's
you're still making them.
Different.
You have dick picks?
Yeah.
Whose dick did you pick?
Mine.
Oh, that's... I would have picked Brad Pitt. Or Justin Bieber. Or...
You would have picked Bieber?
Ron Jeremy.
I don't know.
How about John Cena?
No,
can
thank
I pick
you.
John Cena?
So, besides Goodspeed's draft...
that we haven't discussed yet.
Yeah, just start talking.
Well, I can't see anyone looking at it. I don't...
No, I'm not.
Besides Reality Smasher, there's, like, it was just...
I don't know where it is anymore.
It was green-white, but it was splashing two colors. So, I didn't realize that Reflector Mage wasn't an ally, which was really sad.
Why
but
not?
It never came up. I don't know. Like, why isn't it an ally?
Because mirrors are chaos.
It's just, it's like a human wizard or something. It's just not an ally. but it never came up, so it didn't matter. Nah, that deck was great. Green, white, best.
Green, white, splashing blue, and also colorless.
And no, and black, because I had a quick
and black after.
And blue, because I had a Skyrider Elf. Oh, we already have blue.
With a single ally encampment, supposedly splashing
blue. No, there were, I had some lands.
Oh, just not pictures.
It wasn't just the ally encampment, yeah. I realized I didn't get the picture afterwards, but yeah.
And you continued to go on and 3-0 the draft?
It was only two rounds. It was a new Magic Online draft.
So,
yeah.
So 2-0?
Yeah, absolutely. I did five drafts. I 2-0'd three of them and won, I think, two of them.
How is 2-0-ing and winning different?
It's not. I said 1-2'd.
All right.
What it meant.
I thought you said, and then I won two.
No. One-1'd. I split. I never went 0-2. That was great.
Well, that's good.
I don't know.
It's never been the last.
Speaking of which, Paul, do you still have yours for the untapped non-underscore count?
Yeah.
Okay. I was thinking about that.
Yeah, we just start streaming and shit.
Yeah, here we go.
I did fix my computer. I ripped out the water cooling and rebuilt it.
Yeah, that was the big recent
water
project
cooling?
I'm late.
Or no, I put, with different water cooling.
I bought a bunch of extra fittings so I could do things like make the tubes go at angles sharply by them being fittings and not tubes.
For an amount of time, Sugalite was like unattached
kind of okay.
from the wall and in the sink.
Is it no longer ready to explode?
Yeah, the CPU temps dropped about 20 degrees Celsius at, well, maybe even more at peak, I'm sure. I remember running Prime 95 and hitting, like, over 90 degrees Celsius in the first 5 seconds, and I was like, this is not okay. This is not acceptable. So,
I could roast nuts on that.
95 degrees Celsius is almost enough to boil.
Yeah, 100 degrees is the ideal temperature to roast your nuts.
If we're in Denver, you could definitely boil water.
So,
is it really 10 degrees?
I don't know.
I feel like it's, like, maybe at 98 in Denver.
If you want to look up the boiling point in Denver, go ahead and do that.
Although, speaking of Denver...
Oh, God.
If we're going to go with Puristri...
John Denver, the old country musician?
No. Implied in the most recent Prince of Stride episode...
Which I'm sure everyone is keeping up on.
Which everyone is keeping up, especially you, Steve.
Like the Bachelor.
Our team confronts another
really.
Team who is seemingly better and has been training in America, which leads us to believe they've been blood doping by training in Denver at a higher altitude. We will see on the next episode of Prince of Stride.
I look forward to it.
Buddhistuda.
That show is just infinitely entertaining.
I got my hairband.
Did you?
Yeah.
I need to get my shorts. I have the stretch pants. And then I need a cool jacket. We're good.
We need theme jackets. They have to be from the same manufacturer.
Then let's get theme jackets. I am so... Wait, is that this weekend?
No.
It's a few weekends. It's not next weekend. Wait.
Okay.
No, it's not.
For our followers who don't know...
Yeah, it's the week... It's
none of
it's
us are
March
super
11th.
Into cosplay, but we all decided that we would be in enough in cosplay to go to an anime con if it meant dressing up as the Prince of Stride characters.
And also the anime con was within walking distance.
Since these are both possibilities, we may be going to the anime convention.
Well, we're not going to, like, run there in our new tracksuits and do tricks and shit.
Yeah, like
we just have to pose. We don't have to do the trick. You just have to pose like you're doing the trick. That's how cameras work.
Okay.
That's how all of Instagram works.
I've decided after all my relation, I'm just going to fall flat on my face.
Oh my god, we have to relation so hard. We're
going
to do so many high fives that day.
Gotta practice.
So glad I'm not participating.
Oh, come on. You love it.
You could be Heath.
I have no idea what's going on.
No, you can be Sakurai.
Alright.
You wouldn't have to run, because you're a girl.
Can we give him a really... We can just give him a headset and an iPad.
Good Steve with twin tails.
He's the relationer.
Yeah.
Wait, are we our own team? Are we characters on the show?
No, we're totally going to be our own team.
Oh,
he's
okay.
Just going to be the relationer.
I was trying to be Heath, but I realized
so
I can't do his hair.
I already know I can't come to this. I know I'm busy that weekend.
You can't come to this? Not good material for masturbation?
No, sorry.
We could just put a headset on you and have a picture of you on an iPad and say that you're relational. From afar.
Guys, we need to steal blueprints from the city of Milwaukee to the convention center. So, Ed.
Yes?
What did you play at Game Day?
Oh, we have to talk about Games Day?
God, when was that?
Two weekends ago.
That's so long ago.
This is just Games Day.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so I played Dark Jeskai with similar deck to what I played last time. I can't. We can put the link to my deck in the doodly-doo because it's on Tapped Out.
The doodly-doo.
But it's basically the same Dark Jeskai deck I played last time with an exchange of two cards, both of which were replaced with Joriens, which were great, by the way. I drew so many cards off of them, especially, like, their best turn, as Paul adequately predicted, was Jorien followed up by a Tassager.
Draw
a
card. Four. That seems stupid.
It was great. It was so great.
Everybody likes casting a Tassager for
top
one
eight.
Mana and drawing card.
And then after
it.
Making top 8, I made top 4, and then I lost against Mossy Mardu. So, I mean, I
Mossy
thought I was adequate.
Mardu. Not quite as embarrassing a name as Moist Abzan.
Well, I mean, it wouldn't have been Moist Abzan. It would have been Spicy Abzan. I gave the owner of the deck the option of choosing Spicy Abzan or Mossy Mardu, and he decided that his deck was most likely a Mossy Mardu deck, even though I decided that I like Spicy Abzan more, because
I mean,
it reminds me of Flamin' Hot Cheetos.
I do prefer Spicy Abzan as the name, but, you know, it really depends what the core of his deck is.
The core of his deck was mainly Mardu plus Siege Rhinos, which is why I understand why he did Mossy Mardu. But because he had Siege Rhinos, I wanted it to be Spicy Abzan, because if you have Siege Rhinos, I mean, you're playing Abzan.
This is really what Standard has become, isn't it? Which adjective can we throw in front of a three-color combination to describe the fourth
color? It's because four-color is the most undescriptive thing that exists.
Because four-color is just five-color.
If you look at the top standings for Standard and the descriptions of the deck, all of them just say four-color.
Four-color mid-range.
And that tells you nothing.
Because it could be so many things. It's not even clear what's better anymore.
It's like not even clear if the deck has Rally of the Ancestors.
To be honest, like, Spicy Abzan or Moist something or other doesn't necessarily sell anything else about the deck to me either. It's just like, okay, I don't know. Hang on, I don't play Standard enough, so...
Once you're used to the naming conventions, I'm pretty sure it does. It's like, you know what the con wedges are, and you know what the adjective means.
Yeah, but, like, the deck's still
like,
different
okay,
quite
yes,
a bit.
So your opponent's probably playing Abzan based on the lands, right? But they have a Sunken Hollow to play. What are their blue cards?
Jace?
No.
Could be.
I don't know.
It could be, probably not. Abzan is playing Disdainful Stroke. In the main, and that's it, in the main board. Sometimes they play Exert Influence.
The occasional Exert.
The Sidisi's card? The Sidisi Wonderhop? Sidisi's Follower? Whatever it's called.
That's rally. For Rally.
That's not an Abzan card. Abzan Rally might be.
That's, I mean, okay.
I mean, that's a
that's
Rally. You have to play
about.
That in Rally.
Well, Rally's thing is Reflector Mage.
Yeah, but I mean...
Those decks are blue decks, because they're playing so much blue.
I mean, they weren't blue decks before Reflector Mage.
Sure.
They're only blue for Reflector Mage. Well, okay, no, that's not true. They were blue. Ah. Oh. There were always blue and green and black. No, because then you have to have Rally. I feel like the best version of Rally has always just been four color.
So, I was told to be, like, terrified. Not by told, but, like, by reading on the internet.
Yeah.
At this games day when I made this deck, I was expecting a significant number of Reflector Mages.
Me too.
Zero.
Nobody played any of the decks that were best in Standard.
That's not true. Like, five people played Eldrazi.
That's not one
there,
of the decks.
Wasn't
that
wasn't one
was
of the decks, though,
standard.
And that completely surprised me because I thought I was going to be the only one going in with like
so,
modernless modern.
I had, I think, the closest, I think I had the closest deck to one of the quote unquote me and the Mossy Mardu deck. I think were the closest to a quote unquote competitive deck based off of previous decks in the format.
Yeah, I agree.
And from what I heard from other players, it was the reasoning was I'm apparently one of two people at the Board Game Barrister that has access to a full playset of Jace Lance. Jace Prince Prodigy.
What?
Unaffiliated because Matt's not here tonight?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. At our local game store.
It's a great shop. You should check it out.
To Jace Prince Prodigy.
That'd be a good name for a game store, wouldn't it? Our local game store.
Oh, I thought you were talking
I
about
feel like
unaffiliated.
That's probably definitely one. You know, I saw one online that keeps popping up that's like called Trolls and something, and I think that that's pretty good.
Troll and Toad?
Troll and
yeah.
Toad.
Yeah.
Troll and Toad.
I like that name.
Albert knows what Troll and Toad
what
is.
About
that should tell you
games.
Something.
It's old.
That's right. It's an establishment.
Ganami Games.
In beautiful Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Where are you going? The other Gnome Games.
This is when we got pulled over for speeding between Gnome Games.
And Gnome Games.
And the police officer goes, where are you going? Gnome Games.
Well, he asked where we were coming from.
Where'd you come from? The other Gnome Games.
Originally Surin. I mean, but before that, Milwaukee, so take your pick. You don't even know what you're asking. Oh, boy. Kaz, what did you play?
I played the Eldrazi deck, which was just Ghostfire Blades plus Eldrazi, the good ones.
Modernless Modern.
Yeah, that is actually what I wrote down in my deck list name.
That was a surprisingly hard matchup for me. The only reason I was able to beat it some of the time, and I say some of the time because I lost to it before top 8, but then I won it against it in top 8, was because when I would win against it, I drew so many fiery impulses to kill the Eldrazi mimics.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all I have to say.
I mean, I top 4'd along with you with the deck.
I know.
That deck was really well matched.
And I didn't even know, like, to be honest, like, the first game I played horribly because I didn't know what I was doing. And then afterwards I got used to it and then I just won all my games. And, like, I don't even know Standard that well. And I don't know. It seemed to go pretty well.
You're a good player, though. You top 8 most of the time that we play.
Significantly,
I remember one time when you were playing a Jund deck. I think this was in Ravnica.
No, this was it was pure Golgari. It was my own build of Golgari, and I got in the finals.
Yeah, and I remember you playing for first place in that one.
Yeah.
And that was before, I think, any of us had made top 8. I think you were the first one that made in a game statement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you guys keep making fun of me for it.
But I made top 8, but I lost in the quarters.
I made top 8 with the Miracles Increasing Vengeance deck that I made.
I made top 8 at the first games day I ever went to.
You made top 8.
I mean, that was me, too.
You made top 8 the next games day after that when you were playing the white-blue Azorius Control.
I was playing...
With Sphinx's Robes.
I remember I was the only one who top 8'd with the Golgari deck because everyone was bitching to me to go home. And I was like, shut up,
you
guys.
And then the next one is when Kaz top 8'd, so maybe I was wrong in saying that Kaz was the first one.
Bant was Ravnica Innistrad, right?
Right.
I mean,
It might have been different sets in Ravnica, but that's the best I can come up with.
Yeah.
I think I top 8'd the RTR one.
I think that's
one.
Probably when we all started getting good, though, was right at that...
Oh, no
that
shit.
That was kind of like the barrier when we all started doing well.
I was playing Sphere of Safety in that deck. It was awesome.
Then Goodspeed rolls in out of nowhere during fucking Theros and just owns people.
It's like until...
Has not lost at the BGB.
That's kind of true.
Well, I mean, from now on, we just got to go to the pre-releases and win all the Angels.
Yeah. No, now it's going to be Eternal Masters packs.
Oh, now I even want to do it even more.
Is that a real thing?
Yeah, they confirmed that. They're going to be printed.
Yeah, but...
Shut up.
They did!
That's not what I was asking.
No.
Oh, looking at the barrister prizes.
I don't know, man.
It's probably going to be more From the Vault.
Yeah. It's going to be From the Vault Ducklings, one in August.
From the Vault Atogs.
Oh.
Is that what it is?
No. What could it be?
From the Vault Changelings.
Mistform Ultimus 15 times.
It'd be From the Vault Mana.
Hey, Goodspeed knows this,
could
but
be.
I don't think the rest of you do.
What?
Mistform Ultimus was the first creature to have all creature types. That was its rules text.
Yeah.
And it is now a 13-year-old card. So it's a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle. and rolls his eyes.
I finally got it. Paul, what did you play?
I played Goodspeed's Atarka Red deck.
For what it's worth, the Eldrazi deck was also mine. I couldn't go to games day.
You mean Patrick Chapin?
Well, I they were my cards.
Ownership of the cards?
Except for some of the hangerbacks.
And ownership of the deck idea is different.
Maybe some of the Ghostfire Blitz.
I mean, I gave you those, so whatever. Right.
I went 3-2 and missed top 8. And I beat everybody who was playing a crappy deck full of, you know, like, draft strategies. And I lost to everybody who was playing real cards for Standard.
See, like, only played against real decks.
I forgot to tell Goodspeed one of the decks I played against.
Oh.
I played against Hardened Scales Goodspeed.
Yeah, I know. I knew somebody at the Barrister was playing that. It's stupid bullshit. I hate that deck.
For those of you who don't know, Goodspeed has this, like, unspoken animosity towards the card Hardened Scales. That just it doesn't defy words. It does defy words.
Look. If a counter will be placed, if a creature's entering the battlefield, and a counter is being placed, it would be a 0/0 and it would die before the counter could get placed.
But isn't it so good because you could also do it with the Eldrazi land?
Yeah, that's no, that actually is a good. That's a good combo. But like when you're playing the modular counter guy from Dragons, it's just like go fuck yourself. You don't deserve to play this game. You don't understand variants. It was like.
Oh, was it one of the old cons?
It's a Dragon's card that comes in with a +1/+1 counter on it. Because of Hardened Scale, it's a 1-mana 2/2, right? Which is great.
Isn't that just a card, another, like, a 1-mana 2/2 is not that crazy.
Well, sure, but with modular.
It's pretty crazy. Without some sort of horrible drawback.
Like Zergo.
A 1-mana 2/2 isn't all that different from 1-mana 2/1 in standard, is it?
Why does that card bother you?
A 1-mana 2/1 is much more prevalent, and standard always has 1/1 tokens.
It's the way...
Yeah, I mean, I guess with all those...
So why do you have Hangerback 2? But what Kaz is doing in his deck is just to degenerate with Hangerback Walker, using Ruins of Auran Reef to put counters on Hangerback.
Except Hangerback was one of the worst cards in my deck.
Yeah, probably.
I nearly lost to a Hangerback because my opponent flipped the top card of their library off the table...
I mean,
and the judge ruled that it was fine, and then he drew a removal spell, even though we all saw that the top card of his library was a land.
We're really maybe not doing that situation justice without enough context to...
We're really doing that situation justice by defining how much angst and anger I have around it.
All right.
I still won the match, though, so, you know, fuck you for misplaying.
Fuck you for cheating is what I hear.
I did win through, like, a Ulamog because I made my 6/6 Hangerback Walker unblockable with Rogue's Passage, so...
P.S. That was also a character from our rival team at the local game store.
Oh.
Character.
That's right.
They're called the Charging Badgers.
That's such a better name.
Why? It's just a card name.
It is just a card name.
It's the best card ever, though.
Speaking of
a card people will not remember.
The first thing that we need to do as a group called the Untapped Podcast Click, or the Untapped Click,
sure.
Is...
I'm confused
because
already.
Because they're our rival group, we need to get playmats, because they all have playmats.
No, we need playmats.
So we need to have Untapped Click playmats.
I'll keep my eye out for a cheap...
Why don't we just use the Vegas playmat and then scribble on them?
Yeah. No, because theirs are actually custom-made and have a charging badger on them. Like, not the actual artwork, but, like...
I will keep my eye out for...
Like, an artwork that some guy in Wisconsin made?
Yeah. So, like, what kind of artwork do we want?
Well, we have the... We
can
we
just
have
use
logo
the Untapped Podcast logo.
What else did we play since the last podcast?
Cube.
That's right.
It's the point of this podcast, I think.
In many ways, that's true. So, what did you play, Kaz?
Why start with the loser? So, I went 0-3 again. It's been happening a lot lately.
To put that in context, you could have beaten me in game one of our 3-game match.
Yeah, well, that was going to happen.
And I believe Goodspreed expressed the fact that he thought that he was not favored either.
Yeah, I was never going to lose against Kaz.
To be fair, I almost got a moat down on you, but I died first.
I'm pretty sure you resolved one spell against me in the 2 games we played.
Yeah, probably Gitaxian Probe. That's the only thing I can cast that cheap. I just have 4 drops.
He suspended Lotus Bloom, but never cast it.
That also happened.
Oh god, those dice are so confusing.
Yeah,
they really are. We should have used D6s.
You should just angle the camera differently.
I just
honestly.
The problem is that they don't look flat, but they look flat at the same time.
Yeah.
So it's just like messing my brain so much.
So for reference, we're doing the thing where we're putting a die on the lands to show how many lands
we
included in our deck.
We're just using
D6s. Because that's just terrible.
Yeah, that doesn't work.
Do any of you guys have oversized D6s? Because I only have miniature ones.
No, but we can get ones made that have Stargoyf powers.
Wow, how would that help?
By writing it on a piece of masking tape we put over the die.
You know how to chisel, right?
Just like
Paul?
Star City Games.
That was the most lazy thing I've seen someone do.
On coverage.
To represent Goyf. Like, it's so bad. You can just put a stupid fucking counter on the iPad that controls this.
I guess.
Yeah.
They do it for PT coverage.
I didn't remember seeing a Tarmogoyf in PT
coverage.
They
have a Goyf counter when they had modern PT coverage.
So, do we want to talk about my deck?
Anyways, yeah, Kaz, what's your deck do?
So, it casts 4 drops.
It has a Mindslaver lock.
Yeah, that didn't happen, but that was the dream.
Mana lock.
It's not that much mana.
It's cast and crack and get it back?
Yeah. Yeah, that's 13. I mean, 13
I'm counting Academy Ruins as a mana. Tapping it to activate ability.
Because it uses a land drop to play it.
I'm confused already. Whatever. It would have happened eventually. So yeah, so how drafting went, let me think, what did I take? So pack one, pick one was the reanimation angel.
What's her face?
Karmic Guide.
Yeah, Karmic Guide.
Not pictured here.
Yeah, because I didn't play it, because I don't have anything to reanimate. I believe I have one, two, three creatures.
I count five.
What?
I count Lay of Skydive.
Four, there's four.
Sower of Temptation.
Yeah.
Precursor Golem.
Oh.
Cloud Goat Ranger.
Okay, whatever, five.
Cassager and Batterskull.
Batterskull doesn't count.
Yeah, you're going to count.
I can't reanimate it from the graveyard is what I'm counting these things for.
Okay. Sure.
Creatures for reanimation, I guess, is the qualifier.
Yeah.
I believe I don't remember when I took Tassager. I thought I took him early on, maybe not. But, like, this was going into, like, maybe I get into the whole reanimation thing, which is interesting, because instead of jumping right into reanimation, like I probably should have, there was an Entomb going around, I think I saw Reanimate first. In pack two, I did just open Grizzlebrand.
And then passed it.
And then passed it directly to the person who ended up playing Reanimator. But instead I decided I would stay open. That didn't work for me.
Yeah, staying open is not so good.
Those are my opinions. I know Paul disagrees, but...
In this draft, I think three of us decided what we were doing in pack one, and
like,
just
the thing, like, if you
out.
Just stay open too late, then the
to be
people
fair,
just move in faster, and you're just cut.
I didn't
you're
decide
out in the
what I was doing until about pick six of pack one.
I didn't decide what I was doing until pack two, and even then, I was like,
which required giving up the first six cards I drafted.
What I speculated on in pick two worked out great.
But so, yeah, I took the angel out, and then I was trying to do some sort of reanimated thing, but I didn't want to go into reanimator, and then I picked up Lay of Sky Knight, think I could just do white blue. I thought blue was sort of open, but that's kind of hard to say so early.
Okay, Kev, I think there were a shit ton of blue cards opened in pack one, because all of us were in blue except Ed.
Yeah. Which is weird.
I got those first six picks.
To be fair, I was in blue.
I got Sower. I don't know how early I took Sower, but
pretty
I did get
early.
Sower.
I recognized that there were no good blue cards coming around, though, so I left it very quickly.
Yeah.
I guess Sower is really the only one that stands out to me as incredible.
Well, okay, Treachery.
Oh, I got Treachery pack.
Treachery and Demir.
I think Treachery was my pack two pick. Like, it was Treachery and Grizzlebrand in the same pack. So
yeah, because I never saw a Treachery. Or
I would have gotten a Treachery if you had kept Grizzlebrand.
Yeah.
I would have preferred that.
Well, it worked out for you.
You know what beats Grizzlebrand? Metawar.
Oh, we're even getting in. Okay, so let me finish my deck first.
You know
first.
What beats Grizzlebrand? Sulfuric Protect.
The other thing in pack one, pick one, I was just noticing so many good black cards that were going late, which really annoyed me.
Do it.
And so I took them the end. And so I ended up like Esper from pack one, which isn't the best thing to do when you don't have really any fixing. I ended up finding
it's not the best thing to do when you don't have a Narset.
A decent amount of fixing. What?
It's like you have a ton of fixing.
All I had in the first pack was Misty Rainforest. And I already decided I was an Esper.
What you needed was the Polluted Delta that I took.
And it doesn't get Scrubland.
But
yeah. Scrubland didn't come till very late, the third pack.
Yeah, you needed the Marsh Flats that I first picked in pack three, too.
And I think third pack, my pick one, pack one was... not pack one.
It's kind of Fetid Heath, though.
My
that's
pick one
sick.
Was City of Brass. Because I'm like, fuck it, I really need the
blue
mana.
Blue Splash isn't that strong except for the Treachery.
Blood and Sower.
Yeah. You don't need that on turn four.
I did in one game, but we'll get to that. And so I just ended up being an Esper defensive deck. I had Moat, and I had Sower and Treachery to steal things. And then I ended up with just a shitload of artifacts, like Thran and Ammo, Memory Jar, and then I eventually grabbed Tezzeret. And so I just made it a Tezzeret, Esper, kind of control-y deck that didn't work super well because I also lacked early game interaction. But I had Enlightened Tutor and Bitter Blossom and Batterskull, and so whatever, it works out eventually.
Your cards... ramp up to four real fast.
Yeah, I know. It's just four drops and above. I mean, Tassager...
It's like one drops and four drops.
There's a zero drop in Gitaxian Probe and Lotus Bloom. Your real one drops are exactly Enlightened Tutor. Condescend, Demir Signet, and Bitter Blossom at two. Lie of Sky Knight at three, and everything else is four or more.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of those, let me think. I mean, I had Day of Judgment and Consuming Vapors and Moat. And Sword of Temptation, all of which, like, if I could just get those down in four, like, it's usually a huge swing in my favor.
What you really needed was the Rakdos signet that went around the table three times.
I didn't. Did it go around three times? I saw it. I took Dimir Simic over Rakdos Signet, and I didn't see it again.
The Rakdos Signet went around.
So I don't think it went around three times, but.
I ended up taking it, and I was playing mono red, and I was not touching green. So I know it came around a few times.
So yeah. So my deck is just a bit clunky, but if it got to the late game, it would win, usually.
Passenger's a one drop.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was saying. So.
Not on turn one.
Yeah, I know. I mean, not unless you're playing some stupid dredge deck. So, game one, I played good speed. Well,
are there more?
Maybe we should talk about particular games I've had after everyone goes through their deck.
Kev, how did I beat you?
No, we'll talk about that later.
Kev, how did I beat you?
We'll talk about it after we talk about your deck.
Kev, how did I beat you?
With my own Tezzeret?
Yep. I've turned four Clever Impersonator to Tezzeret, and they just spell Skate of 5-5, and it was great.
You can't talk from that far away from the microphone.
Nah, they heard me.
So, Kaz, how did Goodspeed be?
Oh, is this my deck?
Oh god, Goodspeed. Oh, this deck was so sick. Good.
This deck was great.
Is this my deck?
Look, man.
This deck abused things that I liked, which means it abused Joriem and draw spells. He drew in our first game literally 20 cards more than me. Nearly decking himself, but he won.
It was pretty absurd. So, yeah, this deck was great. That's all I have to say. It was really good. The only card, it could have been a little better.
So it's red-blue.
Yes.
With a white splash for Restoration.
So I first pick Resto Angel.
Which is a good first pick.
It was fair.
It's better than my first pick.
Nothing else in the pack was that good. But, I pretty quickly realized that red and blue were just open, I guess. I think there was a ton of, I got past the Muldrifter. I think I valued Spellskite too highly, but I second picked it. And then I picked Muldrifter, and then I picked, Glen Alundra and Clever Impersonator. And I was like, okay, we're trying to be in white-blue. Hopefully that Leo Sky Knight comes back.
Yeah.
No, because Kaz, fourth picked it. I was like, god damn it.
Why can't I figure out which
everything
side
else in that pack was shit.
Me?
I think it's the one that's reflecting light more. So two plains, eight islands, and some number of mountains.
It's one plains, six mountains, and seven islands.
Mountains.
Guys, it's not that hard. You're exaggerating.
It is hard, though.
It's pretty difficult. You know what? We're not going to worry about it. It was an experiment. It didn't work.
You want me to go back in, Photoshop and just erase the other numbers on the die?
Yes.
Go Photoshop, pictures of our faces on the numbers that are wrong.
It's just so frustrating.
One plane, six mountains, seven islands.
Do you know what we could eventually do? We could eventually just, put our decks on the Cube Tutor website.
No, I like this better.
That feels like way more work than this. I will say, I wanted to be in blue-white because I had the Resto Angel Master of Waves combo that never happened once, and I was very disappointed in that, but I don't know. That was great.
What blue cards do you have, except for Jace, that, would have made that worthwhile?
Metawar?
Muldrifter?
So I have, I have Jorian, I have Manowar, I have Jace, I have Glen Alundra, I have Aetherling, I have Clever Impersonator, which I think counts for devotion, and I have Muldrifter.
It does not.
Clever Impersonator doesn't?
Whatever it copies,
probably the blue permanent, they count, but.
It's just like Ditto in the fact that it doesn't exist after it comes in.
Honestly, if I'm Resto Angeling, to get six 2/1s, that's to get three more, that's fine. That's still great. I don't know. Jorian either got killed or helped a lot, or did nothing against Kaz. That was because I had Tezzeret and a 5/5 spell skite. I don't know. I beat Ed because he didn't draw it. He only drew lands, and because I drew 24 cards in game one. I lost to Paul because I can't beat Jitte.
That was a thoroughly pleasurable match to lose, though. Game one, game three, I lost the whole thing, was
game
terrible.
Two.
Game two,
and then you won game three.
Why don't you talk about your deck, Ed?
Yeah, but Jorian's great. Drawing cards is great.
That's not my deck. That's my deck.
This is you. It's so red.
I know. God, it looks like someone put a red filter on a blue deck. And by that I mean there's no blue cards. So I drafted. So pack one. Pack one. Personal picks and choices. First pick was a Polluted Delta. Second pick was a Kira. Is that the name of it?
Yeah, I think so. Second or third, I remember
Kira
that.
Glass
yeah.
Spinner.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Second or third pick was like Kira Glass Spinner. I picked a Signet at some point too, right at the beginning too.
Okay.
That didn't make my deck. Because after about the fourth card, I started noticing two things. One, green cards that I didn't expect, like Surak, who was in the first pack, to be wheeling were wheeling, meaning that they went past Kaz, which told me Kaz was not in green. And also, there were red cards wheeling that I didn't expect to be wheeling. And I went, you know what? Nah, these are fine. So I grabbed them. And I moved into the red-green deck, which I've played a few iterations of the aggressive deck in the cube. I've played, like, red-white specifically the most. I played some red-black. And I know I've played, like, white before, and I've played white-black before. I've never played red-green before. This works pretty well.
So according to these dice, you're playing 11,106 mountains and 451 forests. How did that work out for you?
Yeah, I mean, my lands worked fine. So I actually really interestingly played... I also played a Gaia's Cradle, which was hilarious. Mostly because I actually intended this deck to be blue-green, and I was drafting blue-green...
Then red was just so open.
And I have all of the blue-green cards, except red was just so open that my blue went away. Like, when you open a pack 2 Sulfuric Vortex, you're gonna take it.
That might have wheeled.
I think it did.
Oh, okay. There we go.
But
I would not think I didn't want a Sulfuric Vortex in my deck.
I got it, like, second pick, actually, is what I think it is.
That was how I beat you in the game where I did it. Because
pack
cards.
One, that pick was... No, because it was pack two, and pick one was Goblin Guide, then second pick was Sulfuric Vortex, and it was just a great pack, and I was like, well, fuck blue, here goes red. Then, like, number three was... pack three, pick one was Collision Relic, which is, like, a favorite card of mine.
Sure.
But, anyways, the deck ended up being... We opened up a significant amount... The reason I wanted to move into this deck was because I realized there were a significant number of 1-drops wheeling in pack 1. If the number of 1-drops in pack 1 had not been present, this deck wouldn't have worked, and I wouldn't have moved into red, because I wouldn't have thought it was good. But in pack 1, I saw Legion Loyalist, I saw Stromkirk Noble, I saw Reckless Waif, and Zurgo. And I got all four of them late in that pack. And I was like, well... I can do this. Aside from that, the only thing that was a problem with this deck was that it was a little bit clunky. The 1 through 3 drops are solid. There's the right number of them.
I think you're low on 3 drops.
I wish I would have had...
You're low on 2s.
I wish I would have had 2 more 2 drops. That's what I was going to say. And I wish I would have had 2 less 4 drops.
Yeah. Toss a Skirk Trailblazer in this and it looks ridiculous.
God.
But the only game that I ended up getting screwed was the one against Goodspeed.
Yeah.
Otherwise, this deck drew perfectly.
You got screwed against me game one. You beat me in that match because you won games 2 and 3, but you didn't get screwed game 1.
Yeah, but, I mean, the deck played well.
So what were you playing, Paul?
Playing a Gaia's Cradle is fantastic in red-green.
That's me again. Why do you like my deck so much?
Because he thought he drafted it.
Stop going the wrong way.
I didn't go the wrong way.
This deck's
your deck.
I had to go further.
He didn't go the right way enough.
This deck should just have Umezawa's Jitai on top of it.
It's in my 4-drops column.
No, I just meant
how
that
many creatures
I
are you playing for the Jitai?
More than you
3.
Would think.
Fleshbag Marauder isn't a creature.
Yeah, it is.
No, it's not. Because it's never up a creature.
When you're playing Hangerback, it is. And Reanimate.
Or Liliana.
Reanimates Fleshbag Marauder, and then it dies again. I don't see your point.
Well, you can if you play it in sack Necrotal, you can reanimate the Necrotal.
There's
so
still not up a creature.
Well, sure.
Why are there so many cards in this deck?
Sideboard on the light on the bottom.
Sideways cards are the sideboard.
Why was Grizzlebrand sideboarded?
Because every time I tried to play Grizzlebrand, I lost.
Yeah, but this is only because of the decks you were facing, not because you should keep Grizzlebrand in the sideboard.
I'm not convinced this should be in the main board in this deck. This deck isn't really reanimation heavy.
Entomb. Does nothing otherwise.
Entomb's Bloodghast.
You can also entomb stuff and Snapcaster back.
You can't shake your head at that when I kicked your ass with Bloodghast.
Not when you entombed it.
All I needed was a way to equip something to Jitai 15 times.
You're talking about Goodspeed's magic.
Okay,
you didn't kill me with Bloodghast.
Just a summary. Paul's deck looks like it's blue and black and value-y. That about sums it up.
It's blue-black control.
Continue the argument.
A lot is being made of the fact that I had a Jitai, but a lot isn't being made of the fact that I beat Goodspeed by drawing the right cards at the right time.
Right.
The Jitai and Bloodghast.
Paul has two of the strongest cards in the cube in his deck, and they're both next to each other.
Ashiok.
Did you ever resolve an Ashiok?
Yes,
yeah.
Against me.
I lost to Ed, and then I beat Kaz with it once.
He exiled...
Okay. Because Kaz used Memory Jar.
16 cards from my library.
Idiot.
All of them were my 4-drop, and I still won through the Ashiok. And that is not a testament against Ashiok. It was a testament to the fact that my deck just drew well and performed.
It's a testament to the fact that hasty creatures are good against planeswalkers.
How is Remove Soul?
I don't think I ever drew it or cast it.
Okay.
I mean, it probably would have been shit against me. Shit against Goodspeed.
Nah, it seems okay against me.
I would have been happy with it against Goodspeed. I just never got it.
Entomb also fuels Murderous Cut, if that's what you need.
I like this deck.
I had a really good turn
set up.
Seems
like a bad use of the card.
Against Goodspeed, where I had Gemstone Mine in play.
You thought it was a mistake to remove a counter earlier in the game. Can we acknowledge that first? You had an Urborg, and you still removed a counter from Gemstone Mine.
Yeah.
That was funny.
So I'm playing Urborg and Gemstone Mine.
But in hindsight, that was the correct play.
Right, it sets up a really interesting play later on that never came up, but I was ready for it because of it. So a Gemstone Mine with one counter on it means that you can put an additional card in your graveyard, and you can make a mana of any color. I had 3 cards in my graveyard, and I wanted to stop Goodspeed from putting a creature on a Lightning Greaves. And I had Murderous Cut in my hand. The play in that situation is tap the Gemstone Mine, it gets sacrificed by its ability. Don't use the Urborg ability, use its natural ability, remove the last counter. So you have 4 cards in your graveyard, black floating, then you can cast Murderous Cut. It looks like you can't, but you can. It would have been really cool if I did it.
It doesn't seem confusing to me.
Did you identify this play during the game?
Yeah, I watched that entire game very closely. I also identified the fact that you, like, accidentally took the counter off that, the Gemstone Mine.
Yeah.
That was also the game that I figured out that Goodspeed had a chance of killing you with an Aetherling, but he couldn't seem to figure that out.
Yeah, no, eventually I did. It didn't work, though.
Well, I mean, obviously it was the best play you could make at the time in a bad situation, but you had the ability to maybe do it.
She takes.
So,
I beat Aetherling by having 2 removal spells in my hand.
And GTA to kill it. No, the GTA couldn't kill it. That's the point.
Do you want to talk about games in particular then? So, I guess I could talk about my game with Paul. Woo! Okay.
Being the game of...
That took
Esper
over an hour.
Versus Blue-Black.
It literally took at least 60 minutes.
It did. Goodspeed and I sat over and watched videos on TV during it.
I don't remember which game was what. What happened? Oh, the first game was the game that took fucking forever.
What I know from the first game, because I heard it yelled over at us, was that Kaz lost the game by decking himself.
Well, there was so many outs that I could have like pursued, but I was just an idiot. I don't know what I was thinking. Honestly.
I played an Ashiok, Kaz played a Moat, and then Kaz played a Memory Jar. And he ran out of cards.
It wasn't the Memory Jar that ran me out of cards. The Memory Jar was correct.
Yeah, 7 sure. turns later, you might have won the game no matter what I did. Given that I had no creatures that could
sure.
attack you.
I mean, we talked about this before. So, like, the first thing I did against you was I landed Moat, and then I searched up for Bitter Blossom. I immediately landed Moat. Like, did I land it on turn 4? I don't remember what turn I landed it on.
So, I think I was on the play... And I played the rat that flips into a 4/2
sure.
on turn 2. I flipped it immediately. So I attacked for 4, I attacked for 4, I attacked for 4. So it would have been turn 5 when you played Moat.
Okay.
You had taken 12 damage from the rat before you got Moat in play.
All right. Played Moat. I followed up with an Enlightened Tutor for Bitter Blossom. I remember paying life for Bitter Blossom and not losing, like, not feeling under pressure from that at all, though.
You also had a Batterskull.
Yeah, but I didn't do anything with it.
You could have equipped it to Fairy Tokens.
Yes, and I could have won the game that way, which is one of the many outs I had. I was also just accruing artifacts, so I just, like, later in the game, I flipped a Mind Flayer into the game. I just had a bunch of random artifacts, and I drained Paul with Tezzeret, and if I was smart, I could have done it again in time to just drain him out. That's how I gained the life. I drained with Tezzeret.
That's right.
And I drained him for 12, and I gained 12 life, went back up to 20.
So from what I'm hearing, it sounds like you lost because you didn't understand the board state.
Kaz had a lot of possible lines of play, and he runs into decision paralysis when he has that many choices.
Mm.
And eventually it was me trying to talk Kaz into using Memory Jar.
You didn't talk me into it.
I certainly tried, and if you didn't, if you decided to use it after your opponent told you to use it, that's silly.
What? How is that silly?
If you identified that I was trying to get you to use it, then that's a signal that you shouldn't.
There's so many times I just tell people to do something because it's the correct play, and it bothers me when they don't make the correct play, and you do that too.
I don't know. I thought it would be fun if you used Memory Jar, and it was fun.
Like when you correct new Magic players for playing their land before their draw step.
So basically,
playing a land and using Memory Jar correctly are exactly the same.
That game stalled out to infinity. I was just drawing cards with Tezzeret and
Onagi.
I ended up with Liliana flipped and Ashiok in play. You had Tezzeret in play, and the game wasn't going anywhere fast.
Yeah,
that's what I remember.
So eventually I lost to decking myself.
Almost.
And then the next game I won. I don't remember how. What did I do?
That was the game where I discarded Grizzlebrand on turn one because I was on
Right. He discarded Grizzlebrand at turn one, and then as soon as he managed to get Grizzlebrand in play, I immediately took it with Sower and continued to just beat his own face with Grizzlebrand. And he was looking for outs. I don't think he ever found one for Sower. But if you did, I still had Treachery in my hands. I was just taking it again.
The benefits of blue.
So that's how I won that game. And the third game, Paul beat me with... I don't know why. I think I just had not that much going on, which is my deck sometimes.
I had the opportunity to play a Vendilion Click-On Curve in Game 3, and you didn't have any action, and I was able to bait you into playing your spells when I could counter them, after I knew what you had.
You talk like you can bait me, like you're baiting me into doing things, but I don't think that much about it. I just play my spells when I have them sometimes.
Okay, well, I knew you could play your spells when you could, and I had counter spells then.
It's not baiting somebody.
It is if they're doing nothing, not thinking at all, and it is if they are thinking. Like, either way.
Even if they are thinking, they could just come to that logical conclusion themselves.
I'm saying
That's not baiting.
It feels like baiting.
How?
Because
you say, I have knowledge of the person's hand, and therefore whatever they do, it's a direct action, it's like it's a direct result of my action.
Exactly that, because I used Revoker to prevent you from using a Mana Rock. And then I let it die at the time when I could counter whatever you would play with it.
With knowledge of your hand, he thinks he's a master, and then he can start baiting.
It's not... You're forcing me to play the game in a different way, but it is a way I'm required to play the game, otherwise I'm losing anyways. That's not baiting.
This is the video format.
Baiting is like encouraging someone to do something because they think it's like, I don't know, the correct play or something.
Thought playing your powerful game-winning spells into counter magic was the correct play.
When would I be playing those spells into later counter magic?
I don't know, after you played something that countered, probably.
All of my spells are expensive things that require my whole turn.
So you have plenty of them.
I can't just wait because you have a V-click beating down on me. So the correct thing to do is just run them out.
So it sounds like some people are baiting and some people are beating.
I'm gonna go back. I'm gonna go back.
I can't even follow this.
Go jerk off.
Use Ed's bathroom.
Oh. Please no.
So who else played an interesting match?
Well, I played Goodspeed, which I think we both kind of drew a bit of nothing most of the games, but like it was enough that he had Clever Impersonator for my Tezzeret, and it just made his Spell Guide into a 5/5 and beat me over the head with it.
So Kaz played his Tezzeret and then whiffed its plus.
I have 9 artifacts in my deck.
And so I got his Tezzeret and made Spell Guide a 5/5 and killed his Tezzeret. I was like, alright, I can't lose.
Sucker!
that game was ridiculous.
I love the play.
It was so dumb.
I'm like, a big fan of Clever Impersonator. So many board states where it just does something that your opponent couldn't possibly do.
Against me, Goodspeed played a Clever Impersonator as a Sulfuric Vortex. And then proceeded to kill me because of the double Sulfuric Vortex. It was great.
That game was amazing. That was the game where I drew 24 cards.
That was the game that you drew 24 cards. Oh, I do not regret that game.
That was a game where I cast Ice when I knew he couldn't cast these spells and he had an empty board, I just cast rid of two mountains to draw three cards. It was great.
Because he copied it with the Chandra and had a Jorian in the play. That was our fun game.
Yeah, no, my deck was great.
I had a fun game against Paul that consisted of... Oh god, what the fuck was going on? Go back to your deck. Oh yeah, the game that was fun against Paul was the one with the Ashiok. And it was only fun because I was certain I was going to lose that game. And then I drew haste creatures.
It's because you have this weird reverence for Ashiok. Well, not weird. You have a reverence for Ashiok based on your experiences with
it. It's because you chose not to minus Ashiok to block. You had, like, ticked Ashiok up to 9 and had 2 4-drops underneath it that would have lost me the game, but you just chose to keep ticking it up.
That's not true. That's not what happened. Yeah, Ashiok never got above 5.
No, he absolutely did.
Played Ashiok plus... You killed my creature and tagged back. Plus, Ashiok again did something you had no play, I think. Ashiok was at, like, 1, got plus to 3, and died. Ashiok never got above 5.
You have the ability to always put a creature on the play.
Yeah, but it was Goblin Guide. It was a 1-drop.
It's still a blocker.
It's not a blocker when Ashiok's a 1 counter.
Still a blocker. Anyways, that was an interesting game for me. Against Kaz... They weren't really very interesting games, because I won.
They were closer games than you thought, if you would look at my hand.
They didn't seem like it from my side, because Cass didn't cast spells except Gataxian Probe. So, and then we were done.
You killed me... Was it turn 4 that you killed me, or was or did I miss a land drop?
I killed you on turn 4 both games.
Is that true? No, yeah. That's not true for the second game. Because the second game, I remember having 5 lands in play. And I was lamenting the fact that I didn't have another blue source because I could have treacheried into Sower and took all of their creatures.
Is it my turn 4?
That doesn't make sense either.
His turn 5, my turn 4?
That makes sense.
You have to have the last turn if you're beating him. So you're going to have at least the same number of turns.
Can't I just have a burn spell?
But did you?
I don't know.
Did you? You may not...
I didn't see you play a burn spell at all, so I was just... And that was my only out, so I'm like, all right, if I would have just had a blue source here, I could have treacheried and soared and taken, like, your whole board.
The first game, I know I beat you on turn 4. The second game, I'm
the first game, I was 1 turn away from just landing Moat, at which point it's over.
I mean, he's drawing the burn spells, then.
Is he, once again?
Then I'm drawing burn spells and I'm trying to cough.
Can we look at his deck?
Yeah, then I'm trying to cough.
I
don't think I have burn spells either, but I can cough. But I'm trying to cough.
I can beat cough.
Sulfuric Vortex?
Yeah, then I'm... Sulfuric Vortex.
Can you beat cough?
Yes.
With Moat up?
Yes, I have plenty of cards which can beat a Planeswalker.
A Planeswalker that, like, taps mountains to kill you?
You're not gonna get there.
How are you beating cough?
Go back to my deck.
You have Sky Knight. Duh.
I do have the Sky Knight. Sure. I had a Sky Knight. Didn't I play the Sky Knight? Or I think it was in my hand.
Doesn't Sower have flying?
You never resolved Sky Knight against
me. Sower has flying. Yeah, Sky Knight was in my hand.
Cards that I saw against me were Gataxian Probe.
Cloudboat Ranger has flying.
I had Merciless Eviction, which can get rid of Planeswalkers.
In one game because you did play Consuming Vapors against me, and I won the following turn.
Yeah, I Consuming Vapors, and I think that was the next turn I could have... I don't know which one that was. It might have been the Moat one, and it might have been the
that was
Treachery
the
turn.
The mana cost I saw. I saw a Tassadar, but you played that earlier than the Consuming Vapors.
Yeah, so I mean, it was just that. It didn't seem like very interactive games. They were closer than they looked, but you did just beat me before I could do anything.
And, I mean, that's just the pairing. I had a really low, like, a really aggressive deck, and your deck needed time to build because of the drops that you had. I don't like playing the deck that I played. It's not like... So I get really frustrated when I play the red deck because it's not interactive. You play really quickly.
It's not interactive in a way that you want.
It's not interactive and you don't have to think. You literally just play your cards as they come to your hand.
That's an exaggeration.
I like playing the red-green deck or like the green-white deck. Like, I like playing different iterations of it. I'm not as fond of the whole billions of one-drops version of it. I like the more mid-range deck where you have to think quite a lot how you want to attack. How you want to go about killing someone, because you can just kill out of nowhere with the mid-range versions. I don't know. I find those decks more interesting than the more aggro builds.
Yeah, I don't know. I just, whenever I play aggro, it just feels...
Like, the decks where I, like, what did I do? Where I could be like, oh, what's some things that... So I did something where, like, I managed to play Serac, but, like, hit through with Serac for, like, 10 out of nowhere. No, in a total of, like, 15 with, like, Serac and Vengevine returning and, like, playing,
Simic Skyswap.
No, the guy, and, like, soul bonding with the guy who gave Double Strike.
Sounds like something Chris's deck would have done.
Like, that's fun to me. And, like, trying to set that up so it doesn't get disrupted.
You can't give Sky Swallower haste,
just the reason that that feels bad to me, like, the aggressive deck feels bad, is that it's not reactive. It's just, here's my stuff.
I had to wait for the correct turn to do that, but...
I agree. The thought is just in, do I play this now, or do I wait a turn?
Well, in the super aggro builds, you just play it immediately.
In the super aggro build, which is what I was playing, is just play everything as it comes to hand. If it's the right converted mana cost, if it's the highest converted mana cost you can play, you play it.
As it gets to later games, it becomes a little more complicated, especially when you're trying to win through the face of overwhelming pressure.
The only decision I had to make was against Paul that required me to say, I should save Sulfuric Vortex 2 more turns because he's got more creatures in play, and I can play a blocker that will also kill him.
The only decision that you, like, realized you made, perhaps.
Well, the other ones are just, like, the state of the game. They're just the standard economy of the game.
Yeah, he put it that way. I think you're selling those decisions short.
Well, because most formats are mostly creature-based, it's a lot easier to just tell, okay, this is how I maximize damage. So my mono-red decks are in general easier to play than a control deck.
I mean, I think if you're talking about constructed, mono-red decks are easier to play because they don't have to react to the format. A good control deck has to have the cards that are good against the specific threats they're expecting and actually do face.
Well, it's true of every deck, though.
It's a lot less true when your plan is proactive. And sure. The mono-red deck is, like, the most proactive version of the proactive deck.
Proactive
so,
decks
yes.
are more interesting
the red deck
in deck
requires
building,
less
no?
thought.
The red deck requires less decisions when building it. It's just, like, how can I maximize damage? But doing that and playing around what your opponent has at the same time actually does require thinking. And if any other claim, I would reject.
Yeah, part of this community, if you look at these decks, there's almost no spot removal.
Yeah, I got shit for black spot removal. It was really frustrating.
I knew I wasn't the only person in blue or black, but I knew I was still getting good cards, so I picked cards early with that in mind, which included Dismember and Murder Spell.
I didn't see a single black removal spell.
Those are all top four picks for me. All the removal spells.
He says with consuming vapors in his...
Yeah, I mean, a cheap...
That's not spot removal, because you can't spot something.
He said
it's,
removal
it's,
spell,
it's,
he didn't say spot.
Consuming
so
vapors, if you're playing an untamed... If you're playing consuming
not,
vapors
you
on...
Listen to this, Paul, I'm not wrong.
If you're playing consuming vapors on turn four, it's basically spot removal. Most of the time.
Not against any aggressive deck, or even like a real mid-range deck.
In the aggressive deck, it will still kill two threats, so it really depends on how aggressive that deck is being. In the mid-range deck, if it's killing two threats, it's definitely basically spot removal. It's killing everything the opponent has.
Well, if it's killing the Birds of Paradise on turn four, they may not care. They already
I'm
played
certain
their
they care.
I'm not.
I would hate to have my Birds of Paradise die even on turn four. The mid-range decks I play are playing five and six drops.
If I played my Loxodon Smiter on turn two and my Serac on turn three, then if you kill my birds on
turn
four,
yeah, that sounds like
I
a nut draw.
Care. I don't know.
The thing is, I'd also be killing your birds and your Loxodon Smiter.
But I get to put in a card after the first time it happens.
And I would hopefully be also playing more removal. This deck isn't. I mean, a Day of Judgment just screws everything over, but... Consuming Vapors is a two-for-one, most of the time. And when you play it early enough, it's usually picking off what you want it to pick off, unless somebody is, like, landing Nest Invader, which can be annoying against Consuming Vapors.
Consuming Vapors is a two-for-one, unless there's a token.
Who the hell has played a Hordling Outburst in this cube? I don't think a single person.
I would have in my deck, probably.
Who's played...
I actually expected to wheel that, and someone took it.
Mirror Battlesphere.
I played Mirror Battlesphere in this cube.
That's what I'm saying. Everyone.
And never that early. Consuming Vapors on turn 4 is not going to be taken on a Mirror Battlesphere, because Mirror Battlesphere isn't out yet.
Or a Hangerback Walker.
I've never played against a Hangerback Walker. It would also deal with a Hangerback Walker.
If it had exactly one counter on it, you could kill both things and gain two life off a 4-mana spell.
Are you playing a Hangerback Walker with more counters on it that early in the game?
I can respond by putting a counter on it.
You're going to be leaving that mana up?
It's a Hangerback Walker, why would I not?
So you could cast a spell on curve?
I already didn't do that.
Hold up a counter spell.
Like a spell pierce.
You could hold up a counter spell, but that would probably just take out the Consuming Vapors, not do anything with Hangerback.
I may have countered Consuming Vapors.
You did counter Consuming Vapors once.
Consuming Vapors resolved against me once. I sacked a 1-drop and then attacked with 2 4-drops.
That's exactly the scenario I described.
Yeah, that happens in the like the super aggressive decks.
It just happened because I had haste creatures, and specifically the haste creatures I had was Serac.
I love haste creatures.
Consuming Vapors is quite good against aggressive mid range.
I think that Consuming Vapors is good.
The one drops, it's bad.
Consuming Vapors is good against the person who only has two creatures in their deck.
No, it's not.
Yeah, any edict is. It's the perfect time
for an
edict.
That's not why you want Consuming Vapors. Consuming Vapors gets rid of three threats and gains you life to keep you alive.
How did we get to three threats?
Two threats.
Because we were using inflationary language. Because you're kind of true. That's wonderful, but inflated.
And the person who has two creatures, I'd rather be playing other cards.
Rather than something that just kills them both?
Yes. Because nobody, if they're only playing two creatures, they're not going to have them both out on the battlefield at the same time.
I'd still just like to kill one.
Okay, then play Innocent Blood. It's not what Consuming Vapors is for. Consuming Vapors is three more expensive.
Yeah, but if there are two creatures, are
that's not even what Innocent Blood is for, because Innocent Blood is for interacting with the aggressive decks very, very early.
If there are two creatures, are Kozilek and Sundering Titan, I would love to have Consuming Vapors.
I wouldn't.
Oh yeah, Grafted Work, you're great.
Ed, you really wanted that Burst Lightning.
You fucked up.
I didn't! So Ed...
He's playing all the burn spells.
Ed cut Thalia so I wouldn't go into red-white, and I just went into red-blue instead.
No, that was a correct play.
I think it was based on the information you had,
during
but
drafting,
it was wrong knowing what we know now.
During drafting, that was the right move for
yes,
me.
Yes, I agree. But given what we have now, in hindsight,
I cut
don't
Thalia,
think right
I cut a quarter paladin. I cut them because I knew you were looking for them. To
yeah,
move
I
into
was,
white,
I
and
was.
You would have taken red cards from me in the third pack,
okay.
And I stopped you from doing
but
that.
But I was doing that anyway.
You took burn spells, but I was fine with you taking.
I actually don't think I took
I got the creatures and the equipment. I already had a Skull Clamp in pack one. I knew I just wanted the creatures. I didn't give a shit if you took the spells.
But they're so good. There was no Lightning Bolt this week. That was sad. I don't know.
There was no Blightning.
Forced me to splash black off my Mox Diamond in Grand Coliseum, Reflecting Pool, and Marsh Blast. I could have splashed black! God damn it!
I thought about trying to splash black.
I was frustrated
black.
That the Mox Diamond didn't wield me. Actually, that was a card out of your... In your deck, that was the card that I was like, here, let's see what the cards... I also thought Abbott would wield me.
Yeah.
And that's the only card that I actually regretted not
yeah, getting.
Yeah,
you
back.
Never saw it as a Signet, because I wasn't going to let that happen.
I wouldn't have taken that.
Really?
I was red-green.
Yeah, okay.
That point.
Okay. Yeah, I think you wanted Burst Lightning and Incinerate and Abbott. That might have been it. Maybe Chandra to go with the other spells. If you get the burn, you might want.
If you had, if your deck is mainly burn spells and not creatures, then you want Chandra. But I didn't have the spells.
Yeah.
Chandra is best in a red blue deck, like you took. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it did. She seemed great.
She's also really good in the red black deck because you get double discard.
Oh God! Just copy your Blighting.
You could copy Slagstorm to really wipe the board.
I would like to just mention that Chandra is just an expensive version of Jace Rune's Prodigy, but that's what I will say about her.
You have to invest the mana twice over multiple turns instead of just copying it.
No, it's really not as good as Jace, is it? Because you don't have the looting first.
It's right. I'm not saying it's better than Jace. I'm just saying it's different.
Jace can just get bolted before it does anything.
Yeah.
It does have one turn of being a creature for sure. Unless you give it haste with Muzio's preparations or something.
And you're playing Dredge.
I do, when I look at cards that I expect to act like Planeswalkers and or let me flashback cards, I weigh them against Jace and Snapcaster Mage, and Chandra doesn't quite make it.
I was really surprised that Snapcaster Mage wheeled. My opening pack had Jite and Snapcaster in it.
I mean, I couldn't take Snapcaster because I was moving. That was... That pack, when I looked at it, Paul, that was pack 3. I took the Skull Clamp because I was already sure that blue wasn't open based on the cards that I'd seen.
That was pack 3?
No, that was pack 1. It was pack 3. For me.
Yeah,
Paul was sitting to the way.
You want to know what I took?
And I had already... Paul, I had already, by that pack, decided that other people were too far into blue.
I believe
because
it.
Because Snapcaster was the only blue card in that pack that I saw that was worth taking. And somehow... There was just, like, this feeling that I had. It was like, today...
Intuition.
Blue is not open.
Correctly, too.
So I just didn't take it.
Do you know what I took out of that pack over Snapcaster? I took Spellskite.
I took a...
Do you know how good Snapcaster is with burn
That's
spells?
That's not true. Because I passed the Spellskite pack one thinking, I'm positive, because I really thought, and because it was in my pack one, because I really thought it was Spellskite versus Polluted Delta for me, because I went, I really don't know which one is the best first pick.
I was okay. Blue.
That
I
was
took,
really hard, and I weighed Polluted Delta higher than
Spellskite. So we passed into the left?
Yeah.
Okay. So it would have been Master of Waves.
That's then. Possible.
I think my draft went Resto Angel, Master of Waves, Moldrift, or Spellskite, and I was just like,
How much equity does Master of Waves lose when you're playing all the burn spells that were in the draft?
Here's my real question. When did you pick Jorianne?
I think a 5th or 6th. Somewhere
around.
Did
she go
around
the table?
Yes. Everyone saw her at least once.
I think I saw her.
I was just really proud of you playing her, because it was her first episode in the cube, and she did fantastic.
She only drew me cards in that one game, but that game was so nice.
Which just really, really makes me proud to support Paul in saying that he was excited about this card, he got the promo for it, and it turned out great in cube.
This is definitely the deck for her.
Jorianne got played before, just not as a game day top 8 promo.
Yeah.
Yes. She got played in my deck.
And in Caleb's deck before that.
Well, okay.
That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about cube.
I know, I'm just joking.
So, I did see the Snapcaster. I wasn't blue. I took Sower of Temptation over it.
I would
not
have done
that. Oh, God. That was that pack?
Yeah.
Oh, I took Clever Impersonator over that.
I think, me, how I was going in that draft, Sower was clearly the better pick.
Yeah. I think I second or third picked it.
Because that's a card that I would have been tempted to take.
All I know is I took all blue cards, I took all white cards, and I was like, you know what, white's not open, I'm going to take red.
I took all blue cards, and then all black cards.
It's a recipe for victory in this cube.
To be honest, I didn't know that blue instants were being taken before it got to me.
I knew that they were being taken because Snapcaster was... I didn't realize that Paul and Goodspeed were in blue, but I figured that one of them was, because I knew that Snapcaster had gotten taken, and I knew one of them was in blue-red because Fire and Ice had gotten taken.
I love Fire and Ice. I would take that if I was just playing blue, but I would definitely take it if I thought I was playing red.
I pegged on it in pack 2 when I realized I needed to take Thalia.
I was also trying to play a blue-white, maybe black splash for reanimation deck early,
and
Sower is the better deck in that show.
This isn't going to work. So I just took it. I like pack two, pick one, hate drafted her against you.
No, it was like pick 3 or 4, but yeah.
Because
I opened her and thought she would wheel.
Because it was specifically to stop you from getting it.
Yep.
I was like, I know he is trying for this card, I can't let him have that.
No, you passed, I pack two, pick two, Vermaz, hoping that white would happen, and it just didn't.
I'm so happy I evaluated that correctly. I counter-drafted so well this draft.
My deck was still great, though. I don't know. Whatever.
You know what? The thing that I'm frustrated about was I last pick past you that fucking Slagstorm, and you, like, 5-for-1'd me. I could have just taken something different from it, because that was pack 1, and I wasn't sure I was going to be in red yet, and I was like, you know what? If I'm in red, I don't need a Slagstorm. If someone can make this work for them, it's great. Whatever.
Slagstorm is great.
And then he just destroyed me with Slagstorm, and I was like, God fucking damn it. Then I was like, you know what, you deserve it, because I did pass it with the thought, if someone beats me with a Slagstorm, that's fine.
Oh, God. Oh, Slagstorm.
How'd you like Jace Bellerin?
Oh, I got the cards absurd. I'm totally on board now. The card's so good. It's one blue, drop your cards, which is fine.
It's a slow Ancestral.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of true. That's how I felt when I played with it as well.
I don't know. No, every card in my deck is just good. Like, there's no card I don't want to play.
I'm not convinced you want to play Lightning Greaves.
Yeah, I'm not convinced I want to play Boggart and Hellkite either.
I lost a game to Goodspeed because of fucking Lightning Greaves.
I can't believe
what
I
happened?
Got...
I don't remember, but I remember having removal spells in my hand and not being able to cast them.
It was probably on...
It wasn't Wrath and Merciless Eviction.
It wasn't on
Edict.
Is that something... Oh, it was on the Hellkite.
You gave it Haste?
Yeah.
Sweet.
So dumb. I like Lightning Greaves. Lightning Greaves is fine in my deck. It's fine. It protected my creatures from the removal I knew was out there.
It feels like that, like the exact description. It's like it's fine.
Right. I'm not upset that I've been playing Lightning Greaves.
It saved you for a really long time against Paul.
Yeah. It made him have to play better.
I definitely played the best against you. There's no doubt about that.
It's so hard when you Vegeta in play games 2 and 3.
Yeah, that joke keeps coming up. I buy into it less than anyone else does.
It's not a testament against your play. It's a testament against Jitae. Jitae is just really good. In the same way that every game against... I'm surprised this hasn't come up yet, but all three games against Paul, I turn one play to fucking Skull Clamp. Like, I'm sorry.
I don't think Skull Clamp is absurd. I don't like it very much, honestly.
I love Skull Clamp.
Absurd in the right deck.
I love Skull Clamp. I took Skull Clamp pack one when I saw that I was taking red one drops and just went, I am going to make the Skull Clampiest one droppy red deck ever. And my actual plan, which didn't pan out, was to play red green with more Gaia's Cradle bullshit, because I expected there to be some kind of elf happening.
Nope.
There was not an elf opened the entire draft.
Elves would have been great in your deck, too.
Is Raphelos an elf?
Raphelos was open, but I wasn't going to play double green.
Yeah, right.
That was the only elf that was open. But yeah. I don't consider that an elf, because it's like...
Because it costs two. Straight up.
I expected like a Deathrite Shaman or...
A Noble Hierarch.
Or a Birds of Paradise would have been fine.
An Elvish Mystic.
I prefer creatures with power or Noble Hierarch when I'm playing red-green. I don't like Birds of Paradise that much.
You know what? I wouldn't have minded Birds of Paradise because I had...
The Grafted Wargear.
I had the Grafted Wargear.
Yeah.
And I had the
Rancor.
I'm on board with this now.
Like, those were the cards that I was looking to draft in pack 2 and 3, and they just didn't get opened. Which I guess I'll take, because I got 5 1-drops that were red. But, like, come on, green 1-drops. I got a Gaia's Cradle that I speculatively took because I wanted to play you.
Yeah, Gaia's Cradle destroyed me in game 3.
It was so good.
I was just like, oh, God.
I top-decked so well against you, too.
Oh, God.
I knew that was going to be your downside, though, too, and that's always the drawback against playing against the aggro deck, is that the top decks are so live against an aggro deck that's not playing many lands.
Yep.
Luckily, the top decks that I had and the top decks that weren't playing many lands were lands, because that's what I needed. But, hey. I mean...
Hey. Yep.
Oh, also, Legion Loyalist OP. I just had to affirm Goodspeed.
Somebody else is on board with Legion Loyalist?
I am so on board with
still
Legion
piece
Loyalist.
Of shit.
Legion Loyalist also helped beat me.
Oh,
I remember that happening.
I am so on board with Legion Loyalist after that day.
Something about the first strike was the problem.
I'm off board with Zergo.
Yeah.
Who I recently heard a joke made about him being like, Zergo.
Because you have to pass after you play him on turn one. Because he's not Goblin Guy.
I figured out why he's a great commander.
But the other thing, like...
I don't understand.
He always costs two. You can dash him on turn two and he's in your hand for the rest of the game.
That still sounds like shit.
So you can keep dashing him.
That still sounds bad.
No way. You know what? Fuck you, I'm gonna do it.
If this gets you to make a commander deck, then go for it. You're probably thinking of Tiny Leaders.
Yeah, that's probably a better option. Well, whatever.
Oh god. Zergo versus Isamaru, the deck.
Isamaru would win.
Zergo versus Sylvan Advocate.
Why?
Because Isamaru has all the swords. It would just fall off of Zergo if he's on his dashing plan.
You don't have to dash him.
Yeah, I know.
Does Tiny Leaders use the same commander role?
But Red gets to play all the artifact removal spells.
So does White.
Like promo smash.
But Reds are creatures.
Red gets Shattering Spree.
White has some creatures.
Not that kill artifacts.
Yeah, it does.
No, it doesn't.
What?
Yeah, it does.
Red gets Smash
Spree. There is definitely at least one creature which has a disenchant effect that is white.
They all kill enchantments.
I will have to look into that.
Smash Spree. I think from March.
Do you know what Red also gets?
Destructive Revelry.
Crackling Dune.
I went with one extra color review. I went two.
Deflecting Palm?
That's only one extra color. And you go with like, oh, Progenitus.
I said, you know what Red also gets? And he goes,
the Progenitus is green.
And I immediately like had prepared Crackling Doom. It was good. Speaking of which, Crackling Doom is the best red card.
No, it's not. It's a black card. It's an edict.
It's the best red, white, black card.
No, it's...
what's it competing with? Kalia of the Vast?
Ponyback Brigade.
Ankle Shanker?
I am so in on Crackling Doom, it's just not even funny.
Mardu Charm.
Crackling Doom for Q?
It's the kind of card that I kind of want to have in Modern, but at the same time I'm concerned about. I feel like I can just play my standard deck in Modern and have it be fine. Like, literally just put in Inquisitions.
Those Eldrazi decks are gonna be twice as fast.
Literally just put in Inquisitions.
I don't think that's a literally, because all of their things cost more than 3 mana.
Not Mimic, which they probably already have in play.
Add Transgress. I'll add 2 of Transgress the Mind of my deck.
Isn't that a 2 mana spell? It's like Modern.
Thoughtseize.
Yeah, there we go.
I guess I could do that.
They're a little more expensive, though.
No, I have one.
One?
They're not as expensive.
Really
now they're just like $25.
Yeah, Ladder.
They were just 25 when they were in Standard.
There's a modern deck I want to build.
What?
It, yeah, no, Standard drove into that.
Torpor Orb Hushwing Griff combo.
Oh my god, I love that deck.
Right?
You should also, the other deck that you should, that you might look at if, you, if you're liking that style is Hate Bears.
Yeah, but I feel like Hate Bears is more expensive.
It's
like,
not. Oh my god,
yeah,
that
maybe.
Deck is cheap. The only cards that are expensive in it are Thalia, or are...
Thalia.
Thalia is expensive.
And I have all of the Leon and Relic Orders.
Yeah, okay. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, and then I have the lands for green, white, and I don't have the Aven lands
might
for... Aven
might be. Aven might be expensive. That might be expensive.
I think it is.
Well, I think
it's at least over the $10 mark.
Against multiple
points. Aven Mind Sensor for Eternal Masters?
I don't care.
I'm hoping for Cabal Therapy.
I have a question.
Hoping for Crucible of Worlds and Damnation.
I expect a Monastery Mentor reprint in it.
I guess. But why?
I have a question. I don't want it. I just expect it to be there.
Why don't you want it?
Oh my god, Sensei's Top.
Or they're going to ban Sensei's Divining Top in Legacy.
Wasn't it already banned?
Counterbalance?
It's banned in Modern.
Oh my god, Counterbalance would be great.
Sure. Ban Top, reprint Counterbalance. Sounds great.
Sounds just like Wizards.
They reprinted Twin and then banned it. Who gives a shit?
They're going to reprint Top and then ban it.
Hashtag unban Bloom.
Do not unban Bloom. It's the most absurd thing in the world.
Hashtag unban.
It plays so many cards that are bad in every context except for its deck.
Unban Jace Mind Sculptor.
Bloom was banned for a very good reason, and everyone knows it. Even Bloom players who are salty about it know it.
I don't know.
What,
Bloom
what
was super entertaining
Bloom
to
players,
watch.
Like, players are there.
Tom Martell.
And Twin isn't especially entertaining. Bloom was great.
Tom Martell. I appreciate Bloom in hindsight.
Yeah.
In the same way that I appreciate a lot of decks in hindsight once they're banned.
Like Eggs.
Bloom was like a much more interesting Storm.
No way. Eggs was boring as shit.
It's really not Storm, though.
They play a whole bunch of complicated like sequences in one turn.
But
and
no, Storm has like the issue of not paying off because you're drawing things and there's a chance every time you draw things. And because the number of cards in your deck allow you to have the variability in it, in your deck building... that it's relatively consistent. Bloom is just, do you have the right number of cards when you set up, go.
I mean, seeing your path to victory is not the simplest prospect.
But once you see the paths, it's easy. Like, I could redo this, the turn 2 16 damage anytime I see it now.
You could.
That might be a personal
It's a thing. Very specific hand that set
no,
that up.
Once you've solved the algorithm and you see just how the mana populates itself, just because you've seen it, you can do it continually. I can do it continually.
Said the math major.
Was the... Oh, shit. The card that just has, like, eggs coming off of him. Protean Hulk. Was that banned since the inception of Modern?
Yeah, Dragon because Egg. Of the Revealer combo.
I mean, it's literally just you cast it, you can get every six drop out of your deck.
That's not why it's good.
Except that would also be good enough to be banned.
The problem is the banned. Infinite combo with Reveal Arc and Viserys Seer and some other stuff.
Karmic Guide.
But when you can take anything with converted mana cost six or less... naturally that's going to happen. And it's not really the fault of the combo, it's the fault of Protean Hulk.
Bloom had absolute reason for being banned, I think is the point. Whether or not Twin needed to be, like, Bloom needed to be.
Wasn't Twin way more consistently successful than Bloom?
It's not about the consistency, it's about the fact that, like, the sheer force of this deck is just...
Okay, wasn't Twin more absolutely successful than Bloom? Like, wasn't it just measurably more successful of Bloom than in all the metrics?
I would disagree in the statement that you're making. The point that you're making is that you think you're ranking Twin above Bloom in the fact that you're saying that Twin wins more because Twin is more consistent. And I think if you're evaluating Twin as a deck being played by 40 people in a playgroup, the reason that you see its stats boosted so much is because so many people played it.
Well, okay, let's put it this way. So, if we assume perfect play, Amulet Bloom is overpowered.
Exactly.
I think
and
that's the idea.
The issue is that there are not enough intelligent people to play Amulet Bloom and pilot it correctly.
There are, but in, like, GPs and SCGs, there should be enough intelligent people.
No, honestly, it's too much work.
It is so hard to play Bloom correctly in time.
So why ban it from a tournament, then, if it's that difficult to play?
Because they want different decks making the top 8 because they want to make money.
That's the only reason I could think of to ban.
No, it's because this deck, if you play it correctly, the reason is because this deck was possessive on Modo because you didn't have to think things through. Unlike in real play, Modo catches you whenever you do something wrong with this deck, which makes this deck easier to play on Modo, so I think the success of this deck on Modo was a lot easier than it was in real play.
The sequencing is still ultra important. It's the same sequence either way.
It's the same sequence that you can see. However, the mana gets populated for you on screen when you do it this way.
You can represent your mana any way you want to. When
you can,
mana
but that invites you to misdo it.
Right. You cannot make mistakes
tapping for mana
on Modo.
If that's really the difference, I would not have expected it to be true.
This is that's the reason that Modo has a higher level of play than actual tournament play.
It has a different level of play.
It has a higher level of
tournaments play. Have an aspect that Modo will never have, and that's the ability to read your opponent's actions, like their physical movements.
Tournaments also have a physical motion of play that doesn't happen on Modo, which is you can make mistakes physically and have your opponent not catch them.
Modo also has misclicks, which can never happen in real life.
You can actually go to tournaments.
Like, they're different, but I don't think that
they can.
One is a more, like, pure way to play than the other, if that's what we're going to.
I'm not going for, like, pure. I'm just saying that the Amulet Bloom deck is more successful online, I think, and I think that the metrics you were looking at were, just the cardboard-style play.
Cass gave me a mirthless chuckle.
Yeah, probably. It's because you don't see Moto Grand Prix and stuff.
I mean,
I also don't understand why, like, Tom Martel always talks about how he did all the work for Amulet Bloom, like, on a piece of paper when he was playing this deck. I don't understand why you don't just have an iPad that you have a spreadsheet open on.
You can't have an iPad, but you can have a sheet of paper.
Why can't you have an iPad?
You people just look play shit with, up.
Because it has internet access.
People play with their phones during games all of the time.
That's not allowed in competitive REL.
I didn't know that.
Oh, competitive REL.
That's why that guy told you to put away your phone.
Oh, I like read on my phone during when people are playing because they're being boring.
Well, the barrister isn't known for enforcing competitive REL anyway, so... No, players enforce the rules. One enforces tournament policy.
Rules that's really interesting that you guys should be really proud of me for getting because I'm getting better at this game.
Talk about
Ready?
Games Day.
Yeah. So back from Games Day, since we did talk about that. Ready? So, in this game against, I think it's called Torn Elemental, right? That's the
name of the card. That's the card.
Okay.
Oh, God.
So,
I don't
and
know
in a game
I
mean. Against an opponent, in, this was like playing for top 8. This was actually round 4 out of 5. But in round 4 out of 5, I was playing against this guy who is the judge, the acting judge for this event, okay?
Oh, good.
The event didn't have a judge. He was a judge. He might have been a judge. I don't know if that's true.
I don't know if he's actually a judge.
He claimed to be a judge, and he was at the event, but he was not judging the event.
Correct. So he was the acting judge for the event. Anyways, he resolves an Inverter of Truth and exiles his library face down, okay? He then goes to cast Torrent Elemental out of his face down library, searches the face down library and puts it into play, and I said, I'm calling a judge. And he goes, well, that's me. And he goes, I was like, you can't do that. And he goes, yes, I can. I'm just looking for the card that I know exists in this area. And I said, you don't know it exists there. You can't do that.
You're not allowed to know something.
And his response
exists.
Is, that doesn't make any sense. And I said, there's a reason Panglacial Worm pisses off so many people, and Torrent Elemental is not a Panglacial Worm, therefore this can't happen. And he just goes, I don't know what that means, so I called Paul over, and Paul told him he was wrong, and then he agreed.
Well, so it's a little more complex than that. I came to the same conclusion that you thought was right, independently. But I'm still your friend, so we had Va also come over.
We had Va, who's also, like, the same level of player/judge as these two.
Va has a higher standing among people at the barrister just by being friendly.
Absolutely.
And he also has just so much time there, and he...
We're all just a bunch of assholes.
Compared to Va? In the perception of the other players?
But,
sure.
Va is a player, though. Like, also, even though he wasn't in top 8 with us, he set up the entire match because the people who were setting it up didn't know what was going on for top 8. He set up all of the pairings for us. He solved, when we got to top 8, like, who could shake to get in.
Clean cut.
Like, he did all of it for us. He's just very team-oriented and very game-oriented. He was a very nice person.
He's also very smart. He knows what he's doing.
Exactly. You don't feel bad to ever play against Va or lose.
Right.
Because when you lose against him, you know that he needed to win.
Even though I keep beating him somehow. But anyway.
You and him play very similarly.
Do we?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, your deck beat him in Games Day, so...
Yeah, which one?
Eldrazi.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Like, when I play against Vaughn, it's like red-green or red-black. Like, in Modern, he plays, like, a red-black-green.
Yeah. He was playing Jund less than I played in Standard.
In the end, the conclusion that was come to was that you're not allowed to look at cards that are exiled face down unless the effect that exiled them specifically says that you're allowed to do that.
Which Inverter of Truth does not.
Well, which
Torrent Elemental does not.
No,
the effect that exiled them was Inverter of Truth.
Well, sure, but...
That's the only effect they could tell you could look at them when they're face down.
Okay.
So, that was the conclusion there. And that's accurate.
And, that is an accurate ruling. So, cool rules thing with the Panglacial Worm argument that we had, like, four podcasts ago?
4 months ago?
Long enough ago.
A number of podcasts ago that I can't count.
Is that really 4 months?
I don't know if it was on a podcast, honestly. I think it was before a podcast.
I don't know.
We might have brought it up as a joke.
I just know that I learned about Panglacial Worm, and then I used it, so...
If you don't know, Panglacial Worm says it can be... Whenever you search your library, you can cast it for its meta cost.
From the library.
Yeah, which just makes no sense. Just go look it up. It's funny.
Steve, you'll get that joke.
Yeah.
Boom.
All right. So, I don't think there's a lot else to talk about, unless anyone has a soapbox.
Yeah, I'm tired.
Here's my soapbox. Go see Deadpool. But you already did, because everyone did.
I haven't seen it.
I haven't either. I don't think I will.
I'll probably see it eventually, but I'm not super excited for it.
And cut.
I mean, I can go on my soapbox, I guess.
Kaz wants to bitch about card prices.
Yeah, I do.
And why the reserve list is dumb.
Well. So, I guess this is just in response. I mean, I bitch about card prices all the time. I'm a whiner. But this is sort of in response to the whole Eternal Masters thing being announced. And let me think. So Eternal Masters being announced, it is being announced with a print run that is smaller than both Modern Masters and Modern Masters 2015.
Sure.
And people were complaining that the Wizards is being too cautious, not printing enough. Now, the comparisons aren't... between Modern Masters and Eternal Masters aren't the cleanest, but I do know that in both Modern Masters and Modern Masters 15, there were a lot of cards which got reprinted, which had no significant reduction in price,
Despite being reprinted,
the price didn't go down, right. Which makes people think that the set wasn't printed enough.
Well,
since we've had some time, did you actually look up any information about that?
No. I mean, Tarmogoyf.
Tarmogoyf's price has gone down. That's mostly by its relative low amount of play now.
Right.
Okay, Arcbound Ravager went up.
Relatively high amount of play.
So what I'll posit as a...
Arcbound Ravager went up before Eldrazi too, though.
What I'll posit as a counter-argument without stats is that the benefit of having Modern Masters printed is that it brings down a few card prices... and a few of the other cards stay at a relatively stable price because of the demand. But what that does is get people excited about building decks in the format.
Well...
and I think that's the point of Modern Masters, when it's printed.
I think part of the point should also be to lower price, especially when cards have
and
been going up.
And cards
but,
do lower prices.
But it's not
like
the cards...
Emrakul went down.
It's not the cards people want the price to lower on.
People wanted Emrakul to go down.
Sure,
not
but like a card like
really.
Full Intermage, which should not be as
the,
expensive
the cards
as
that people want to go down don't go down in price.
Right.
The most expensive cards are the ones people hold on to, and that pulls them into the format.
Right. The most expensive cards that you open in these formats are the
yes.
ones that are resistant to price changes anyways. So the amount of
I
cards,
agree.
Unless it's unlimited print, is not going to reduce the price.
That's not true, because there's always a limit you can hit price will go down.
Here's my counter-argument. Khans of Tarkir is still a playable format right now in Standard. And every single day, the price of fetch lands goes up. And they are still open, and it is still an unlimited print.
I don't know if they're being opened in print.
Packs aren't really being opened anymore.
I see your point. You can go to a Target and buy Khans of Tarkir.
You can go to a Target.
They went down, and they continue to drop.
And open a $34 polluted double.
It's not $34.
It wasn't $34 any of the times you've said that in the last 3 weeks either.
It was
20. Like 20.
20 is still like $10 higher than it was when Khans first came out.
Well, that's the thing. When Khans first came out and there was a lot of print of Khans, mm-hmm. those prices plummeted.
Yes.
There wasn't a fetch land over 10 for a while.
So the question becomes, why doesn't that happen with Modern Masters? And it might be that the MSRP of the packs is just too high.
Well, Modern Masters has still not been printed as like... a very significant amount. We went to Vegas, we saw a lot of it, obviously.
Right. Yeah.
But
I would agree that it's the MSRP of the packs, like the staple supply set, that's probably promoting these prices.
I don't know about that.
You can't buy 40 of these packs because they're all $15 if you're on a budget.
Well, the MSRP is 10, but at this point they're higher than that.
You're 15 right
you
now.
You can't buy 40 of these packs because no one would sell you that many at once.
I mean, I don't know. I would just
Game Stores get something like 3 or 6 cases, which is 18 boxes.
The only time I've bought Modern Master 18 times 24 is for stocking stuffers because they're fun. I would never actually buy them because I think they're a waste of money. You can just buy the card.
You know, the card, the pack you got me had a card I wanted because I think it's going to be great in Modern because of Eldrazi.
It's a stocking stuffer, and it's great that you got something you wanted,
yeah,
but I
no,
really didn't
awesome.
Expect anything to be. I know Kaz got a Karn out of it, so he can't... honestly can't be complaining.
Are you kidding me? I can complain all I want.
It's Kaz's pack. He can complain if he wants to.
So,
I
just have a problem with it. I don't know. I feel like they're certainly trying with Eternal Masters to hopefully lower prices somewhat. Like, they are trying, but I'm afraid that they've been too hesitant with Modern Masters, and they're probably being too hesitant now. This print run is even less than Modern Masters, significantly less.
I don't think that the point of Eternal Masters is to print cards that reduce prices.
Why not?
The point of Eternal Masters is to print cards that allows people to play a limited format that will get them into playing Eternal
format. Reducing price will get more people to play the format.
No,
so, the
yes,
problem with Legacy is the reserved list. You can never reduce the price on Legacy beyond the threshold of cards that they can't reprint.
Another thing I'm upset with Eternal Masters, it tripled the price of all the Reserves lift cards because they mentioned that they weren't reprinting Reserve lift cards on there, which is stupid.
They can't print them by
I mean,
except they've been considered removing the Reserve list.
They did one test print of a card in a limited print run environment, and there were some people who responded very negatively to that, and they said they would never do it again.
They said that, but they also said they would never get rid of the reserve list when it was first initiated, and there's been plenty of people who advocate the dissolution of the reserved list.
Yeah, but nothing's changed since then. Since the last time they
when
considered
do you consider
it at
something
all.
Changing?
One of the From the Vaults included a card that was on the reserved list.
So Kaz,
which card?
Specifically to test the reserve list as an
wait,
institution.
Wait, which card is it?
I don't know. I don't remember the card. I'm like, I can't cite the name of the card.
I just want to construct a counter-argument here. Let's just say that they print Eternal Masters in unlimited printing, right?
Yes.
I'm not advocating unlimited printing.
I'm just waiting. Just let's say they did with the cards that they print, okay? They print nothing on the reserve list, and they don't print dual lands. Okay.
Well, the dual lands are on the reserved list, so...
I don't know where the dual lands are.
They're on the reserved list.
Okay, so they just don't print cards on the reserved list. You open a bunch of these packs and get a ton of cards. Their prices all go down. You still can't play the Legacy deck on budget because each dual land costs an amount of money.
And the price will probably increase when people
because
think they
people
can play Legacy.
Because people want to be buying into Legacy. So it doesn't pay Wizards to print a format that has a reduced price on any of these cards in the format because what they're going to make the most money off of is specifically printing a format that just gets people into the format. It's not to get them to have the cards. Because they make money off of people trying to buy.
I don't want to have an argument about how Wizards is making money.
Well, okay, and this argument applies to Modern Masters too. Modern Masters doesn't exist to get you in to get you the cards you need for Modern.
It's to get
right.
you into Modern.
It's okay. I think it's primarily to have a fun draft for what people will spend money to play with power where you could open powerful cards.
How does getting you into Modern?
It gives you a binder that has some really expensive cards in it that you can potentially have to trade in and then purchase the rest of a deck in the format.
Opening Eternal Statements, or Eternal Staples rather, is just a way to make the draft more exciting.
Are you okay with prices just continuing to rise on all cards?
No.
They don't continue to rise on all
except
cards.
Except a lot of them do.
No, they don't.
It's
yes, they do.
It's kind of inevitable.
Reserve list cards certainly will.
I think it's true for almost all cards that I've seen. Not only that, but cards are incredibly resistant to price change when they increase in price once.
This is the whole Mythic argument with a rotating set. That if you buy every single Mythic from a set right as it rotates, the value will only go up because no one's opening it anymore. Out of standard, I should say. Like, I've seen evidence of this from Theros Block, where somebody bought all the Mythics and showed them they literally all
don't understand why people are reserved to printing cards specifically for lowering their price to combat the increasing prices. Why does there need to be why does it need to be a fact of the game that cards will just continue to get more expensive? I don't understand that.
I have an interesting thought on this point. I want to try it. I want to try something
out. I want the game to, like, I play the game. I want to play the game. I'm not, it's not even true for just being a collectible game that all the prices have to rise. That's,
may I?
Sure.
I just had a thought, which is basically that there are something like 15,000 unique cards.
Sure.
And the number of players keeps increasing. The card supply of older cards doesn't increase.
Yes.
Typically. For Wizards to prevent prices rising across all cards, they would have to print every card that exists already again to lower the average price of cards. The Wizards cannot be expected to reprint an increasing number of cards every year.
That's not what I'm asking
for. But that is... it exactly like addressing your claim about why do card prices rise necessarily?
No, I'm saying why does that have to be an accepted fact of the game?
It does.
Like, why, when something gets too high in particular, can't we reprint it in order to lower price?
Because the company makes enough money to say that's the way it is.
And that's part of my other argument, is that they basically have a monopoly on the situation.
They do.
Yeah. And so, how is that ethical?
It's, how is an energy company owning an entire city ethical?
It's not.
But it does.
So what? I could still complain about it, because it's not ethical. I don't like it.
I don't see how this is unethical, I guess, because...
Okay, so let's look at it this way.
Wizards owns Magic.
Wizards doesn't prevent you from playing Eternal Formats.
And
you can do that if you want, but...
And playing Magic isn't a need.
Except it kind of is. And will you let me make my argument on this? We are at a point where Magic is a significant part of our lives right now. If Wizards just decided to increase the packs to $5, and they just did that, and we had to pay $5 for each pack, we would probably do it anyways. Would you still want to complain about it, though? Because what exactly is changing that made these cards worth more?
I wouldn't pay for packs, because I still don't.
Except you do. It would cost more to go to a sealed event.
That's fine.
You literally don't care at all. You're getting the same value, but just everything is...
I would,
more expensive
in
general,
for
no
the
reason.
Same number of packs back that I already do.
It's still not changing anything. You're putting more value into the game than you normally would.
And I would be getting exactly the same value back.
Well, you're...
Cards, once you put money into the game, that's not worth money. Those cards aren't worth money. You can say that you can flip it any time for money, but that isn't true.
I'm not saying that it's stock. I paid the money to play in an event.
And now you're paying more money.
I don't mind paying $30 to play for a day, regardless of the prizes. I would give them away. It's fun to play for a day. And $30 is certainly enough to...
At some point, there's a limit, isn't there? You're not just going to put unlimited money into a product that you enjoy.
The jump from 3 to 5 for me isn't that big. That's $50.
I'm making an example. That's kind of annoying.
I would still pay $50 for someone to entertain me for 10 hours.
I would complain about it. I would say, why is there any need that this has to be $50 as opposed to, like, the past $40? What has changed that made these cards more expensive? In that sense,
popular
that's what
demand.
I don't understand
okay,
about.
Okay,
it's not true in this case.
Well, okay, so year over year, because of inflation, the cost of all goods and services rises.
Yes. I don't know if that's enough. You can apply that to Magic in, like, an overlay and explain away Magic's increase in prices with inflation.
I'm not saying that Magic rises at the same rate as, like, the price of milk or gasoline. It's obviously not tied to other commodities, if you want to pick specific examples.
Gasoline would also be a terrible example.
The point is, expecting prices not to rise at all is unrealistic.
And the prices don't rise.
Why?
Within the staple standard, which you can stay and play within.
Because the cost of producing cards doesn't remain the same, and it probably increases with inflation at the very least.
And the amount of money that Wizards is getting out of players is also increasing.
Wizards doesn't get extra money out of players for playing in the secondary market.
No, but they do get extra money out of players just buying more packs. Like, I don't understand
your
argument.
If you're going to play in the secondary market, which is in any format beyond standard, you're not buying packs.
So are we villainizing...
Somebody is buying those packs.
Are we villainizing Wizards of the Coast for making more money because they have more players?
No.
Like, you're making
your
it sound
argument,
like it's
your argument
wrong.
Was that it costs them more money. I am saying they're also making more money. I am offsetting that argument of it costs them more money
it doesn't,
to make cards
doesn't
now
make
than it did previously.
Once the cards have been printed, Kaz.
It's not what I'm arguing.
Well, but the card prices are mostly on cards that have already been printed.
The big card prices
yes.
that you're talking about are in the secondary market that Wizards doesn't control.
Except they could easily control that if they tried harder by reprinting cards.
They're also part of the secondary market.
They can affect the secondary market just like you can in anything by printing more copies of older cards. But they've already stated that they won't do that.
Except they do that, and they try doing that. That's why part of why they do it. You may not agree with it, but they do release sets like Modern Masters and Eternal Masters for lowering price.
There is a sanctity to having a reserve list, though, if that's the part that you're... the only thing that I'm hearing that you're complaining about is specifically the reserve list.
I'm complaining about everything.
Has Wizards of the Coast ever promised to lower the price of cards?
No.
So you're inferring that Modern Masters and Modern Masters 2 and Eternal Masters are sets designed to lower the price of cards?
I mean, I've read articles by them that said they were designed to, like, lower the price of cards.
Well, that would mean that they said that.
Okay.
Which is what you rejected out of hand initially.
Well, because it wasn't any, like, official statement.
An article by someone representing Wizards, it's an official statement.
Then they contradict themselves all the time. Particularly Morrow.
Kaz, here's a question.
When did Morrow talk about this?
He didn't, but I'm saying if we're considering everything a Magic employee says as a official statement from Wizards, everything they say is contradictory.
You might be exaggerating, but that's, I guess, acceptable.
I have a question for you. Which cards are the most expensive in any format?
I don't know.
Across the board.
The ones with the highest perceived value?
The lands.
That's another thing I don't understand.
So here's my question for you. Wizards did something that was very clever recently that got a number of people into Modern, that printed cards that were equivalent but not the same, that slightly decreased the value of a set number of cards, but also printed cards that were separate at a lower price. And that effectively got a ton of players into playing an already popular format.
So what are you talking about?
We're talking about Fetchlands in Modern. They reduced the price of Zendikar Fetchlands by reprinting Onslaught Fetchlands and Khan's Block.
The reason
a lot.
Zendikar Fetchlands are still $70
per
Fetchland.
But you don't need them to play. People were playing Zendikar Fetchlands.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I like it. You know, it's another good idea. They could print lands at uncommon instead of forcing them to be at rare.
That changes.
Why is something that is so necessary for the game and to play correctly have to be priced at $20 to $30
at least? Because that changes the limited format.
Except it doesn't really.
Yes, it does. Because if you're playing a draft format where
there are so many
a number of fetch lands that are opened that fix your colors, they have to design the set different.
There have been so many limited formats lately with just common dual lands.
Let's put it this way.
And they function almost like entirely similarly in a limited environment.
Addressing Ed's argument in a different way, printing a bunch of dual lands at uncommon does have an effect. It means they have 10 less uncommons they can print that aren't lands.
Well, I'm saying they could replace it with when they print uncommon or common dual lands for fixing for in like particular for an environment like in Battle or Othar. In both, they had uncommon dual lands. Why not just make the rare lands the uncommon dual lands?
Well, here's the point. They could print a cycle of 5 pairings of fetch lands as at uncommon or common. They could do that. It would not warp the limited environment that much. Because those aren't that good at fixing if they can't fetch dual lands.
They would just function as dual lands. Right. Like, it wouldn't be that amazing.
And if you weren't playing both colors, you would not play them in limited.
Slightly better.
They could print them at common. The reason they don't is because that would devalue the people who already own those cards. And the question is, should they care about those people?
I'm talking about future lands.
But lands that would be...
Yeah, Goodspeed's point is, does Wizards care about people who already have a value invested in their cards?
And they have to. That's the only logical way to justify not reprinting these staples.
And by continuing...
At an available rarity.
And by continuing to print cards, like, in that manner, like, that's just making more people who they have to be, like, beholden to.
By having more players, it makes people have to be beholden to.
Kaz, would you be happy if they printed Karnak Common?
No, once again, my argument is not to drive the prices of these cards to nothing. Printing Karnak Common would make it drop to 50 cents. That's not what I'm arguing. I just want prices to go down a little in response to the ever-increasing prices of a lot of these cards, so that I can afford them.
To counter that argument, since I started playing this game, I have wanted a relatively cheap way to get into these different formats. And it doesn't exist. There is no cheap way to play Legacy. There is no cheap way to play Modern. You just can't do it. At least not competitively. And that makes no sense to me. The Gauntlet they just did is the closest thing I've ever seen to allowing you to cheaply play competitive formats. And I just don't understand that. It doesn't make sense to me. That there is no medium for playing these formats that everybody, that are fun and competitive, but you just cannot do it if you're not willing to invest hundreds of thousands of dollars. And that doesn't make sense to me.
I think it's
not
stupid.
Hundreds of thousands.
It's, you know, hundreds to thousands is it, what I
it's
say.
Hundreds of dollars, maybe a thousand.
Well, okay, in vintage?
Vintage is a thousand if you want to play Moto.
Right.
Well, as we've recently researched.
Sure,
this.
Sure.
Which was
yeah,
a very...
I didn't say hundreds.
I mean, one thing which bothers me is that...
By every deck in Vintage.
I'm a little... I play Magic, I guess not quite as much. I don't play... Like, I don't spend so much time in Standard or Modern
I understand.
As I could. But I feel like, I don't know, if I could buy more into it, I would. And that's partly because I have other things eating up my money.
Sure.
So, like, I feel like...
Well, okay, but I...
Wizards, I feel like, this is an environment where... You have to put a lot of money forward to have this be your hobby, and it kind of becomes your main hobby, and it really kind of limits the casual player from getting anywhere in these formats.
Okay, so Ed, you rock climb as a hobby, right?
I do.
How much did that cost to get into?
About $400.
How much does it cost you to keep doing?
$250 a year.
Okay. I guess that might be comparable to Magic.
Plus,
but again,
every third year I have to get a new pair of shoes, which is about 100.
Well, sure, but you could say we're spending $250 on events every year. That would be reasonable to say, close to that, because we don't just go to the pre-releases, the four pre-releases a year. We go to more than that. You could say our expenditures total that much a year, and it costs us way more than $400 to keep playing in constructed formats. I think
it does.
Have any of us actually measured that?
No.
I've made new Standard decks a few years in a row, and I gave up because it ended up costing me thousands of dollars.
This Standard has been silly. The Standard we've seen for the last year has been silly in its prices.
So,
I actually think the Standard has really cheap lands on average compared to past Standards that I remember.
I think I keep a very close tab on my input in the
sure.
mind of things.
Sure.
I think on an average year for tournaments that we play in, let's say we play at the... pre-release events, which is four, they're all about $30,
right.
Which means I've paid about $120. I think then I've played in maybe one or two tournaments outside of it, which each cost about $20 to $30. So
sure.
Let's say that I play six $30 events.
All the games days are about $20 total.
So let's say I paid, you know, maybe like a maximum of $180 to play in an event.
Sure.
In events in a year.
Yeah.
Out of that, I think I win back maybe $100 of the cards.
Yeah.
And I open maybe another $40 of cards out of those.
Sure.
From those events only.
Sure.
Like, that's disregarding all of the outside things that I play in. So I'm getting back and or opening at least, and that's if I'm not having a good year, because I've had more where I've had more. I'm getting back or opening at least $140 out of that $180 that I estimated. So I'm only losing $40 to play.
That's not comparable to money.
That value is perceived, is the point.
It's a perceived value, and it isn't money because it's not easily exchangeable.
Magic's pretty easy to liquidate compared to other commodities if you're willing to do it at like a 70% of your
price.
Perceived value.
It's lower than
you're
70%.
You're expecting the commodity that you have. Kaz, I think that the issue that you're having is that you're expecting the commodity, once you own it, to be equivalent to a stock, and that's just not how Magic works.
It's the exact opposite of what I'm saying.
What you want and what you expect might be different in this case.
You've expressed feelings on two things. One, you expect cards to be worth something once you have them.
I've never said that.
And you're disappointed. No, because you're saying that they aren't worth anything because they're not equivalent to money. Which implies that you expect...
I'm saying that only to shoot down arguments that you still get your money back out of it.
Okay, so you're saying...
When the money is really already sunk.
So you don't care about the price at all?
Not really.
So when I said we could lower Karn's price down, and that would be fine, and...
I would be fine with it. I know people would be upset, and they're right to be upset. Because I understand the opposing argument.
Okay. The alternative is to have a format where everything is free.
Yeah, or we could just lower the prices of cards $10 to $20, which is all I'm really asking.
How do you have such fine-tuned control over the economy?
You don't, but I also don't understand why people view it as a don't adjust the prices or bust either.
Who does that?
That's both of your arguments right now.
That's the idea of the reserve list, is we should never try to affect the prices of these cards.
Which is stupid.
Right. I think that's the point.
Well, that was them reacting to them affecting the prices of the cards too much in a negative way.
I know, and they could do it as long as they do it right. And
okay.
They could lower prices.
You're asking for them to hit a very, very small target with...
Do you know...
imperfect information.
Does anybody here really know economics or how these car prices are affected?
Also, nobody does.
I don't think it's that fucking hard.
Also, Wizards doesn't, and they're terrified
of
overdoing it.
That you're talking really loud right now. I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is complicated.
As someone who's taken three economics courses and knows differential calculus and how you apply it to economics. Yes, you can do math that gets you in a ballpark, but it's going to be plus or minus percentages, and that's something that a company who, and this is just from a macro level for the company that's running, that's trying to make a surplus and a revenue, is not going to be willing to do when they're already steadily making a revenue.
So you're saying Wizards of the Coast is consistently successful at a steady rate?
Correct. They're profit.
So they're not in a position where taking extreme risks
once
is to
again,
their benefit.
I think this would be good for many players. I think it would be good for the game, personally. I would enjoy it more. I don't care about Wizards' profits.
That's an understandable point when you are in the group of players that wants there to be a change in the prices so that you can play formats that you're interested in, even though you have the ability to play in formats that you seemingly aren't.
I don't know what you mean by that.
It seems to me like you're interested in only playing Eternal formats now, even though you
could just be
playing the standard format, which hasn't had any adjustment in prices since we started playing.
Okay. Let's slow our roll. That's not true.
Is it?
And how much is Jace worth?
That hasn't changed the standard environment.
It has. It has, though.
Every time there's a standard environment available, there is always a card that is expensive.
Jace level.
So here's the point. And I read a bit about this. There were MTG Goldfish articles I read. Back in the Battle for Zendikar standard, the cheapest deck was close to $400, which for standard is absurd. That's really high.
It's because they printed fetch lands.
Right. No, it's because they printed fetchable dual lands.
It's because they printed fetch lands.
Well, it's both. Those two together.
Fetch lands.
Without the fetchable dual lands, fetch lands are not that good in standard.
The fetch lands are still going to be above average value for a regular standard land because they're also played in all other formats.
So as soon as you add 16 more cards to a deck that can be valued over $10, the deck automatically goes up.
The deck playing 64 cards. Yeah, right. Sure. But before they printed the fetchable dual lands, it really wasn't that bad.
Right.
There were still affordable options.
So the issue is the fetchable dual lands. It was not Jace.
There was still no Jace, which is played in every single blue deck and which costs $75 a card.
Is, to get a playset of Jace, you need about $400.
One question I have, I think, here is, what is the threshold for expensive? Like, who gets to choose what that is? Because it's a personal thing, right?
I think what it comes down to is what's competitive, which is a hard thing to judge.
It's competitive versus expense. I really don't care if we're going to go person by person. If a card is competitive, I will not mind paying an expense for the card that's up to $40 for it.
I mean, there's the expectation of it being good in standard, and there's the expectation of its perceived value over the long term.
In this standard, you would be locked out of playing Jace, except that you got lucky.
I paid for them when they were less than 40.
You also just opened two, and you traded for one.
I traded for two.
So you didn't pay for them?
I traded $120 worth of
cards. That's not paying for them.
Except that I don't think that saying your cards are worthless because you can't turn them into money today is a
I'm not
real
saying
fair
they're
argument.
Not worthless.
Do you know what I traded for that, Jace? Just out of curiosity.
No.
I traded the closest thing to money, which is lands, because those are the most stable prices of any cards. That is a true statement.
I don't know if the battle lands are going to maintain.
Follow
RTR. Maybe it's within a certain realm of when standard release, but the shocks fluctuated quite a bit for a while.
There is a reason that you've noticed if you look at any of my decks that I've been converting all of my lands, which are the most stable cards, into foil lands, because that's an even more stable card.
Ed's behavior brings up an interesting point.
If you are interested in purchasing or trading for cards that are stable, that will not change in price, you invest in foils, you trade for foils, because they don't change much because they're more restricted, and you find things that are more stable based on their playability, and that is lands.
If you are listening to my argument at all, I don't care. Like, that's not why I'm interested in playing Magic. I don't want to collect cards, I don't want to set up a portfolio of cards which will change in price or not. I want to play Magic, and I want to be able to do so affordably.
Right, and I tried to bring that up. I brought that up earlier. That's the point here. That there needs to be an affordable way to play competitive Magic, and there isn't.
We do that all of the time when we played Sealed.
But that's... Okay, but Sealed is nowhere near as fun as... they're different. Sealed and constructed are very different. There should be a way to play constructed environments without spending $400 to $1,000.
I mean, ideally, you open the cards and you need to play constructed in limited.
Okay, but then you have to spend money to keep playing limited.
And that's the thing, too, which...
And the only way to make that happen for everyone is to print these expensive cards in common.
Which I mentioned, too, is, like, when you get partway in, at that point, they do kind of have a monopoly. You already spent money, or you spent amount of time collecting some cards, and you need to find the rest of them. And you're not going to be able to collect them all without spending money. And so if they just arbitrarily... If those card prices just arbitrarily start going up, you're kind of locked into buying them regardless of where the card prices go.
I don't agree with that standard. If you're playing the sealed events, if you play two or three sealed events during a format, you are capable of trading the rares and the cards that you've opened for the other cards that you need for
it. It's not true at all.
Absolutely.
Counterpoints?
Not true.
How many Kalitas do we have?
If I didn't play cons at all, I can't play standard.
Just because there are only four people here and we may have one or two Kalitas,
I don't think we have any.
Does not mean that we don't have access to them at the BGB if you just ask to trade for them.
Which is already money you put into the game to get those cards, right?
Which is fine. You can trade money.
So that's not
invested
really costing any less money.
Invested.
It's not costing me any more money either.
It's not costing me
any more.
But you can't get everything that way.
Yes, you can.
No, you can't. You open two Jaces. Like, I don't... You would not be able to have... Like, you would not have played that deck otherwise.
But he also opened an event he was playing no matter
what. I didn't open a significant amount of dual lands. You guys had to purchase all of those dual lands. You did not open them all or trade for them all.
Correct. I purchased a few of them.
You purchased, like, all of your dual lands.
That's not true.
How many did you open? We all bought playsets of
Five Bloodstained Mires throughout the course that I've traded around, which is a number of the cards that I traded for a Jace. I opened three Flooded Strands, and I opened one or two Polluted Deltas.
You and Goodspeed also bought a Fat Pack every week.
Of cons, yeah. It was valuable to me to do that, and I opened up a number of packs.
I won a
booster
box. That's
a lot of money still.
Also... For what it's worth.
You can't make these decks by just going to pre-releases and then making the decks on the cards.
Right, but
that's not possible.
No one has ever said
Ed said that.
No one said
I said
that was the point. And
I just
said
it was the ideal.
To compare
It is the ideal, but
I also said that it's very difficult to compare the standard with fetch lands in it, which Wizards tried to do to reduce fetch land prices and reduce the prices of entering Eternal formats. Two other standard formats that they don't exist in.
I'm not even the one who started this. This was Goodspeed's.
I think that you're going to see, as soon as we get to Innistrad, as long... Bearing that they don't print fetch lands or a new set of fetch lands in Innistrad...
I don't think they will.
I think that you're going to see a significant drop in the price on standard decks, and I think that you're going to see that they're more playable.
Unless Jace is banned, standard decks is still going to be too expensive.
Well, okay, that doesn't mean... No. There will still be an expensive standard deck, which there usually is.
Plays Jace, and all the best decks still play Jace.
Okay, but doesn't mean there won't be a mono-red viable alternative.
That is true.
It doesn't mean that there won't be a green-red ramp. Green-red wastes ramp. That's also alternative, which we've seen.
Which was quite expensive.
Red decks are losing Ugin, which makes them considerably
cheaper. Ugin is expensive. Ulamog is expensive.
Do you think there's any enjoyment that you get out of beating an expensive deck with a significantly less expensive deck?
No.
There definitely is.
What I find out on tap, it makes me mad when people play budget decks, because I know their intention is to beat the expensive decks, and it just... The reason
but that's the thing with me too.
Contradicting the point of expensive decks, and it makes no sense to me. Your budget deck is not going to consistently win unless you're Conley Woods and you're a genius.
Conley Woods' genius did not express itself in cheap decks.
Well, whatever the deck was, the unknown deck he showed up with, right? That's the whole Conley Woods myth.
When he wins, he's just playing different expensive cards.
Sure. But my point is. But the idea of budget decks enrages me, because it shouldn't have to be a thing. I don't know.
I mean, just, what about some cards? Like, I mean, I know I talk about these cards a lot, because they're both cards I want, but, like, Crucible Worlds and Damnation are expensive for almost no reason.
Crucible Worlds
and there's cards, like, okay, Arcbound Ravager is $50, sees way more play than Crucible of Worlds. Crucible of Worlds is $70, and was printed in Mirrodin, which saw way more print than Darksteel.
The people who are buying Crucible of Worlds are playing Legacy, and they have higher card prices.
Legacy has never been known to drive card prices as much as Modern.
Legacy players expect higher card prices, so they will buy cards at higher prices.
How does that at all correspond to the demand equals higher prices thing, which everybody has been talking about?
That's exactly how demand works.
I don't understand.
Demand for legacy cards is lower. Therefore, the price can be elevated on them and still have the exact same elasticity on the curve.
So it's artificial price fixing.
It's not artificial. It's
but it is.
There's a lot of examples of artificial.
It's not
price changes.
It is not artificial at all. It is directly price fixing. If players in Legacy and Eternal formats were unwilling to purchase Crucible of Worlds for that price, the price would go down.
That's the other thing, though, isn't it? Like, I bitch about my medication all the time. I'm not in a situation where I can refuse to, say, not pay for my medication. It's $200 a month. If it was $100 a month, I would be much happier. I'm not in a situation where I, like, that is just artificially rising the price of, like, my medication to
That's
the point where
I
can't pay it.
Raising the price. And medication is a very difficult topic to discuss. Understandably, because a pharmaceutical company had to put a vast amount of money and research into sourcing animal resources and human resources to test these unsafely on people who were willing to donate their body and take side effects so that you could benefit from this cause. On top of that, the pharmaceutical company is getting massive suing rates from those people who signed away those rights to test these drugs. And now the price is being put towards the government. If you can blame anyone
for
the price being elevated, it's the government. There's no altruistic way to set up a business that makes money.
I've read articles about it, and I disagree. I don't want to get into the argument here.
That's just not a possible thing when it's something that deals with medicine.
I disagree, but
medicine
that's fine.
Deals with human health, which is sort of definitionally, like, fundamentally different than magic cards.
But that's also a way for them to say, we're dealing with human health, it's important, you can't spare the expense, and they can make it more expensive just because.
That is
yeah, that's why it's different.
I know, that's stupid.
I don't think that's what we're talking about, though.
It's not.
That is kind of what we're talking about, because you're saying Crucible of Worlds, Legacy players just expect to pay more, and so people artificially make the prices more because Legacy players will pay.
The only way
for
we're
it.
Relating these two is the fact that they cost money, and the fact that money all revolves around the same idea of supply and demand and economics.
And apparently price fixing.
It's not price fixing. There is a ceiling and there is a floor.
Where's the floor? All I see are things going up.
The ceiling is the price at which people become unwilling to pay it. Once a price reaches the ceiling, it will no longer pass it. The floor is where it drops to, at which point supply has surpassed the demand.
Ed, I understand.
So
it sounds like you're just unwilling to meet the market rate on.
Yeah, for me, the demand isn't there. It's not sufficiently there, and it annoys me because I'd really like to play it, but I'm not willing to pay that much money for cards. And it kind of annoys me, like, if you mentioned that there's just people who are willing to pay a lot for cards because they expect to pay a lot for cards, even though the demand isn't actually there. Why is that relevant?
We all play this format for free at the expense of Paul.
Why is this relevant?
Kind of. It's not even that much of an expense.
First off, we all contributed to this cube. Paul certainly contributed the most.
What? Okay.
I would be perfectly happy playing a budget cube.
My contribution to this cube has been almost nothing. If you look at the cards it's been like $20 maximum. Like the 30 times we've drafted this, at any other place, I would have paid $1,000 to draft as much as I do here.
There is a good amount of cards I own in this cube, and there was a lot more that I owned in this cube.
Here's the point, Cass. You don't understand why people are willing to spend this much money on individual magic cards, I think. I don't either. I don't get it. It doesn't make sense. The demand isn't there in my mind, in my perception of the game.
But you still continue to do it yourself.
No, I don't. I'm not buying these cards.
Right. I'm not buying into Modern. I could have bought iMovies, and I didn't, because I don't think it's worth it. You can say that's a whole other reason, but the point is, the demand isn't there.
But you bought $100 of Standards cards.
Kind of. I buy cards that I think will maintain their price, because they are good inherently.
So you bought into Standard.
Or I buy cheap cards.
So you bought into Standard with the expectation that the cards that you purchased will elevate in price as they move into a Modern.
Right. Now, were they to reprint these cards at Common, I would be annoyed, but I wouldn't be upset, because I like the idea that other players could get that other good players could get into the competitive scene that can't afford to do it in the first place, because these cards are so expensive.
I just had a new interesting thought.
Sure.
If they printed the cards with the highest play value at lower rarities, the cards at higher rarities would, by necessity, have a lower play value. It would feel wrong,
in
for
what,
lack of a better
For what
term.
Format? For Limited?
Standard, even. Like, if the cards that were most playable when constructed were the commons and uncommons, and the rares just were not constructed playable, except, wouldn't that be really weird?
But they do that all the time.
How much has Lightning Strike seen play? A lot.
Okay, Tarmogoyf would be a fine common in a limited set, because he sucks in limited. But he's great in constructed.
Yeah, there's individual counterexamples in both directions. I admit that freely.
And there are plenty of rares that are unplayable in every format.
Yeah.
Like Hedron Archive.
Nah, you can totally build a Hedron Archive.
Yeah, casual.
I'm not saying that every rare is constructed playable. I think that's sort of what is implied by that argument.
The idea of having an uncommon or a common that is more powerful than a rare or mythic is wrong.
It would just make the purpose of rares and mythics non-existent.
Okay, but if we're talking about feelings and not just objective play value, you could print expensive lands at lower rarities and not have that much of a problem with the feeling of rares and mythics being rare and mythic.
Yeah.
I think uncommon lands would be a great idea.
On the other hand,
so here's the reason that they don't do it. And this is just, I understand what you're saying, and I see what you're saying. The way that you get players as a company to purchase more cards is to have a valuable card that they need for their decks printed at a higher cost, because they only sell Wizards only sells cards in randomized packs.
Sure.
So the way for Wizards to profit is to print cards at a rarity that will cause you to purchase an amount of randomized packs. The stability of the card's price is based on the average number of packs you need to open to get that card assuredly.
Right. I would be interested if Wizards would produce data on how many packs they think they sold because of Expeditions. How many additional packs did they sell because there was a 1 in 100 or 200 whatever chance of opening an Expedition.
What I would encourage you to do, because I think that this is available for you, I don't think Wizards would publish this. You can do a few things. One, you can look up Wizards' yearly makings, their revenue, because that's published, because they're a governmental company.
They recently published that, I think.
They're a company.
It's because Hasbro is a publicly traded company.
So you have they have to do it. The other thing that you can do that I think is something that I found very useful for following is if you go on a site like TCG Player, if you look at something called the market price, rather than the price that's being sold, it shows you what people are purchasing it for at the basic level.
Yeah.
That's averaged across all stores,
and
that shows you where the card is at. Those prices are generally not the prices you're purchasing at. So if you want to make profit off of this, and I'm not saying this isn't about reducing the prices at all, this is just about smart buying and magic at this point for me, is if you're going to purchase cards that are expensive, purchase them when they're below their market price, or don't purchase them because you're wasting your money.
I already do that.
And at that point, then find a format that you enjoy playing that uses cards you've purchased.
I mean, I understand part of this is my problem because I get bored with standard monodex so fucking easily, whereas a format like EDH or whatever, I'll play that deck more than once. And, like, and that's partly my issue, but
you also deconstruct and reconstruct your EDH decks more than anyone does, and you spend more money on them than we all did.
Yeah, I did spend a lot of money on them, and I regret it.
I think that the value of certain cards isn't going to change regardless. I wish that they could print lands at a lower price. It's something that I think that would be useful for new players, but I understand why it's not stable for Wizards to do so.
If they could figure out a way to just lower, I don't understand just the backlash here. Like, if they could just figure out a way to lower, like, cards which are highly sought after, if they could just lower the price $10 to $20, would you guys be okay with that?
Okay, what if they could do it in a way that didn't lower the price of the originals? Because it is a collectible game.
That's fine, too.
The backlash is because it is a the reason that you're getting an emotional backlash is because it is a collectibles game, and each of us in the room has invested a significant amount of money.
Except all of your future investments would be far less.
All of our past investments also are.
Yes. Hopefully it would balance out.
I don't
make getting into the game easier for newer people.
So, you asked the question, and I'd like to try to answer it honestly. What it might come down to is that I don't have a problem with the game as it costs right now that much.
I mean, I think we're all very biased with our own situations and how much we're willing to spend in Magic. That's a personal thing, and so naturally we're going to argue from what we believe Magic should be worth, whatever.
I just don't think there's a, like, if there was a way to do this, I can't figure out what it would be. I don't know how you could do it. I just don't understand.
I think Modern Masters was almost fine. They just need to tinker with it a little more.
The only reason
they should print more?
Kaz,
yeah.
Your complaint in Modern Masters was the only one that I've heard specifically that affected you, that bothered you, was Tarmogoyf. And the reason that the price on Tarmogoyf
wasn't the only thing.
Didn't go down was because an unnamed game store hosted this
SCG.
And purchased every single card of Tarmogoyf that was opened that someone was willing to sell. And then they monopolized the market. And when it's a secondary market, that is monopolizing, and that is something that their store chose to do. I understand how that's the annoyance. Luckily for everyone else, they got their just desserts in the fact that their appreciation, if they hadn't sold those cards by now, just went down over 50%.
The biggest thing that hit me off was just the fact that the Eternal Masters printing just tripled prices of cards I was thinking of getting before, like Grim Monolith. Now Grim Monolith is $60. I'm just like, why? Because they announced Eternal Masters and they announced that the card wouldn't be reprinted.
The steady state
it's
of
just
those
annoying.
Cards is not the
it's
same.
So annoying.
No, but like...
But you're arguing that they should be when they're expensive.
No, I'm saying that the level, the price on that card right now, Grim Monolith specifically, the fact that it supposedly tripled when Eternal Masters went up is because a bunch of people purchased it because it is functioning essentially like a limited code.
I don't even believe that.
That is
I think it's very clear that after the announcement of Eternal Masters that vendors would just artificially raise the price in response. Because more people would be interested in getting them. They can do that before demand happens expecting demand.
They elevated it because people were purchasing the card.
That's not true.
Because
I've come into lots
going
of situations. Yeah, they do it before the demand increases because they believe demand will increase.
That is them speculating.
Which is them also kind of fixing their prices in a way.
It is producing
a precedent for price that, like, this card is now worth more because we believe you will want it to be worth more, and because we set it at more, now you do believe that.
If demand doesn't increase, the price will go down. This is the point with the market value.
I just do not believe in capitalism as much as you guys do.
This is the point.
It does it sound value. Like you're frustrated with how a market
works.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that's it. How a market is entangled with a game that you love.
I think there are so many examples of where just letting the market do its thing is totally not the correct answer. And I don't know what the answer is here, but Wizards could certainly have some sort of influence and lower some price.
Sure.
I don't think Wizards does nothing.
I don't think so either. I'm just a little annoyed by the tepid steps they're taking. Maybe it's the correct thing, maybe it's not. I'm just concerned that this hobby is getting more expensive.
I don't think that it's any more expensive except that your knowledge of the cards has increased.
It's more expensive for me.
Because your interest in cards that you didn't have interest before.
I did have interest in them before. I had interest in them before. I thought they were expensive then, and then I didn't purchase them, and now they're even more expensive.
And you're still interested in the same cards.
Yeah.
Versus having a changing interest, which is with cards that are of value if you're going to play in the...
There's other new cards that come out that I'm interested in. And there's also cards that spike up in price randomly. Like... I mean, it's not random. Chalice of the Void was never worth $50. Now it's worth $50 because of one deck. But the price retention in Magic is so great that price is not going down, even if Eldrazi gets banned. It's going to take a long fucking time.
Chalice of the Void was expensive the first time I bought you guys Modern Masters. Cause
it was $10 to $15.
Because Matt opened one and it was expensive.
$10 to $15.
I think that's right.
Which is expensive.
Now it's 50.
It's like that type of expensive that once you're used to buying Magic cards, doesn't feel expensive anymore.
When I'm talking about expensive, I'm not even talking about $10 to $15. I'm talking about, like, Arcbound Ravager and shit.
You know...
But, like, I have one more example.
Sure.
Where, like, I specifically looked up Blightsteel Colossus because I wanted to get it, and I'm like, well, now Blightsteel Colossus is $25. I looked where price increases were happening, and they seem to always happen, like... The price increased $7 every year during the same month, over a period of 1 month.
Was it the Modern Pro Tour?
No, nobody played Blightsteel.
You say that.
Was it
during Q?
A set spoiler?
I don't know. No, because it happened the same year.
There's got to be a cause for
it. It was all at the beginning of the year. Like, it was January to February, the price raised of Blightsteel Colossus, $7 to $10, then flatlined. And then raise $7 to $10
okay.
Next January to February.
So that is right before the Modern Pro Tour, and that's also during spoiler season.
It's also
but it wasn't Blight Steel wasn't relevant during any of those during any of those times, nor was it ever speculated to be good.
I mean, it was though. I remember a Masters call Blight Steel shape a new deck that was like a modern thing for a while.
I don't remember that.
I know Matt is building one. So.
it's like, not. It's not a big thing.
It doesn't have that to be a big thing that was for a market thing, to respond to it.
That was a thing when like Blight Steel released. This isn't accounting into the.
Because it's not a big thing, yearly. It's a speculative thing, and the reason it's going up is because before the set is printed, who knows when the next birthing pod is going to be.
The fact that it's not consistent over, like, the years or whatever, and it's just 1 month, is really just, is
I would expect it to go up whenever a modern tournament becomes high coverage.
But that's not true. It didn't go up at all in the last modern tournament.
You mean the Pro Tour?
Yeah, the Pro Tour.
It would go up whenever a modern tournament is expected to be high coverage. Because again, this is all speculative, and as you said, because of price retention, nothing ever goes down, even though it never gets played.
So open up Blightsteel and see if it went up in a month ago.
I don't know. Again.
I just look at that, and I feel like people are arbitrarily raising the price because time has passed, and it's annoying me.
I don't think anyone here is opposed to the idea of having a cheap way to play constructive.
Except
formats.
It very much feels like it is.
No, it isn't.
What we're arguing is that Wizards, again, this is going back to the whole Wizards doesn't agree with this argument. Wizards has a reason to not do this. It's because they like money, because they're a company.
Yeah, and I say, fuck them, I want to play the game.
Well, okay. And again, that's what I'm saying. They should offer a cheap way to play constructive formats because the idea being it would bring lots of players to those formats.
I just see no problem in lowering the prices of some cards a little bit. I don't understand why it gets so much backlash.
You're not presenting a solution to the problem that I believe...
It's not my job to present a solution.
Then I don't believe that could happen.
You're saying unless I could come up with a solution myself, it's not possible.
Well, you and the other 2 million people who want card prices to go down...
So I'm not in charge of this game.
Let me put it this way. So, what a lot of people consider the way, in heavy air quotes, to lower prices is to reprint them in sets like Modern Masters. I don't believe those sets exist as a primary function to lower prices. They exist to be a fun draft format that has a secondary or tertiary benefit of lowering or raising prices. So they design a set like Modern Masters with the intention of it being played in a limited environment.
This is also a really interesting backlash after everyone wanted Eternal Masters to be released. Like, really, really wanted it to be. And like, and that's just like the plebeian Reddit that wanted Eternal Masters to be released. When it wasn't announced after the Modern Pro Tour, they threw an absolute fuck fit because it wasn't going to be released. And now there's a backlash about it costing money.
Alright, look, there's always going to be a loud minority of people having a backlash against everything. That's what I think this is in both cases.
There's a lot of complications to this that
sure.
I think are worth mentioning at least. At least in the case of Eternal Masters, this was rumored to exist by somebody on Reddit who's been right before.
Are we going to go into the whole vendor thing that turned out to not be real?
Not yet.
Okay.
The other thing that I think is that a lot of people wanted Eternal Masters to be announced with the caveat that they were getting rid of the reserved list.
Yeah.
And so those people are still going to be upset because that's not what was announced.
Right.
So you really already had two different camps of people who wanted Eternal Masters. There were people who just wanted legacy staples that could be reprinted. And there were people who wanted Eternal Masters to represent like the symbol of the reserved list being abolished.
They just printed Vintage Masters in Modo.
That was at least 2 years ago, because I was not playing Magic.
Online is a different animal.
It reduced the card price. It allowed the card prices to be in online, and they are so low compared to real-life cards.
That's
just
true.
Totally different situation, though.
It's not at all.
It's the only thing Wizards could realistically do to reduce the prices of reserve-less cards. If that is their solution, they did it.
The problem here being that this isn't a solution because Modo doesn't work. That's the biggest problem with this, as a solution.
It mostly works.
It works a lot
better
than
it gets more flack than it deserves.
So, right.
So the reason
that.
That Modo gets a lot of flack is because there are certain times when interactions in the game don't work. However, the number of times, and I'm horrible for like calling Modo out for it, but at the same time, there are so many times that Modo prevents your opponent and yourself from misplaying that
sure.
I think it makes up for itself.
Sure. It's reasonable.
Look, at some point, if these prices are just going to go up, it's going to reach a threshold where people are no longer comfortable paying that price.
This is what people say.
Very
let's
rapidly.
Die.
And so they either need to focus on new formats.
Right.
Or they need to do something about the price.
Which would you prefer they do? Personally,
I honestly
I would rather
don't
see a new
know.
Format.
I would like new form. If it would take my mind off it, I would do it. Like, honest, that's fine.
I would rather see Legacy and Vintage die and just see new formats come up.
That's fine.
Years,
people
honestly
would still play them, I'm sure. Vintage is already dead. There is, like, no sanctioned Vintage tournaments of any caliber.
Sure.
And but then the argument is then what those cards that sit in binders supposedly as cash, what are they doing for anybody?
What are Beanie Babies doing for anybody?
Yeah, you know what Beanie Babies are doing for anybody now? They're not worth shit anymore.
If you have
nobody cares.
If you have a whole again, it goes back to collectibles. Collectibles do have value just inherently. That's the weird thing about them. That's why you can't print them to
they
be
only collectible have value which people give.
Right.
That's not inherent.
Well okay.
What's the value of money? Like, paper money.
People's belief.
It only has the
wanna,
value you give to
I don't
want to
get
it
into that
it's
argument.
It's not inherent. Yes. It's a piece of paper.
I do not want to get into that argument because it is not relevant at all.
People's belief is what gives the cards money. People believe they're valuable because they're rare. There's not many of them. There's not many Black Lotuses. That's the whole idea, right?
Sure.
They have, that's their value. It has nothing to do with play value. Those alpha and beta cards aren't worth so much because of play value. It's just because they're so rare. And play value contributes to it. It's why Twiddle is worth less than a
and
Black Lotus.
When the
what?
Want of somebody who just wants to look at it in their binder supersedes the want of somebody who wants to play it, that's when I get annoyed.
Okay, but you can't control either of those people.
What?
No. Here's my point.
No, I don't.
You okay.
Trade with me.
That's fine. You probably don't want anything I have anymore. I sold my cards.
Cass, those people can want what they want, and you can't control that. I think Wizards has an ethical responsibility to step in and say, this is a problem that needs to be fixed. But they won't, because they like money more than they like that.
They
I mean,
will
maybe
do
not
it
ethical, but
to the extent that they can make money off of it.
Right.
Which is exactly what you get with Modern Masters.
Yeah.
That's what I really expect them to do.
I don't know. I mean, if what they're doing is working, go them. It's losing money from me.
That's the whole point. They're losing more money from you than they're gaining. People like you.
We'll see.
And three long kids as the, and freshmen in high school.
I guess the point
well,
is,
there's a lot of people who are annoyed, but we'll see.
The point is, they won't take risks to see if people like you would spend the money to make up for it.
Which is probably a mistake.
And if, as long as they're profiting, it probably doesn't seem that way to Hasbro.
That's true. I mean, I'm not arguing whether or not it's the right thing for their company to do, because I frankly don't care.
Is it to carry people through to their 30s and 40s to keep playing?
It is more and more. The average age of Magic players is going up.
It's because they have retained certain people.
It's because the average time you play Magic is 9 years.
I have a question.
If you retain one 50-year-old, the average age is going to go up drastically, because the range of people in the meme that play it is between, like, 14 and 24.
I have a serious question.
Outliers don't mean much when you have such a high density of
people. Hold on. How do you get census data on casual players for this? I don't think you can.
Wizards seems to think they can.
I think that you can with DCI numbers.
Okay, but DCI numbers are only people who go to competitive events.
Pre-releases.
There are players. Okay, how many players are there that don't have a DCI number? That's the question. And I'd say it's a lot.
I would say that there are probably a bunch of people who buy the Magic Duel decks just as a normal board game to have at home.
Yeah, sure. And those people count.
They do.
But there's no way for Wizards to measure that.
That is how I started playing.
Okay, so
there is a way for Wizards to measure that.
It's math-based.
They could get those people interested.
They
try.
They know how many they sell.
Sure.
They have a survey, and from that survey, they can identify how long people have played.
Okay.
And what products they're buying.
But how do you get people to take that survey?
Well, the people who are going to take it are going to be the entrenched players.
Right.
People visit your website.
Exactly.
But they can find out what products are being sold to people who don't take the survey.
Okay.
With math.
Yeah.
And the people who don't take the survey are the casual players.
But then how do you... Okay, my point is, how do you determine their demographics? I don't think you can.
They probably still have ways to do it, but again, it's not as good of data as just, you know, them filling out a census.
Right, but you can't...
You're still guessing.
Right.
It's educated guessing.
Yeah, but that's my point.
It's important.
I don't feel like we can make that... I mean, we can make claims about the competitive Magic team, but we just can't make claims about Magic as they sell the product.
Wizards of the Coast thinks that, like, 45% of their players are female. Including the casual audience.
Well,
but competitive Magic players are like 90% male.
Yeah, right. And the question is why?
Well,
But whatever, that's not what we're here to discuss.
I think an interesting question is just
someone you teach them to play, and then they play casually.
Yeah, that's the idea. That there's societal norms barring young girls from playing card games.
It could just be that casual players are handed cards by entrenched players
from cuddling or touching each other.
Sure.
What are you saying?
No, I just wanted to make what you said marginally more PC.
Well, I don't know. Like, I was brought up in an interesting way. Like, I don't know, I go to people and, like, when I was a kid, I talked to people and, like, just the amount of manliness they had to put off bothered me. I'm like, what? This is stupid. Why can't I talk about what I'm feeling in the moment? This feels real to me. Why do I have to dodge around the issue? I don't know. Stuff like that bothers me. I guess this is off point. It's a stupid societal norm.
Oh, it's a fairy. Anyway, we can spend all day critiquing societal norms.
It is an interesting fact of being off-put by people who do not fit the societal gender norm, and that is a true statement. Which is why there's been such a recent backlash in the transgender community.
Backlash to what? Societal norms?
Yeah, it's okay. The transgender community is finding a lot of backlash recently because they have people who have been very public recently, who get very expensive surgeries that look very acceptable, versus people who don't look as acceptable and don't act as acceptable in their gender that they identify as.
So that feels like they're sort of buying into gender roles themselves.
Correct.
Feels like they're sort of selling out the community.
Right.
So you have
which is selling out
backlash
community.
Within the community.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because you have
I understand that completely.
You have the affluenza group that is transgender, that is able to fit into the gender that they want to be, but that exacerbates the issues that people who, the common person who is trying to switch genders that cannot do those same things to the extent that the person did.
Mm.
This is going to be an X-Men metaphor all over again.
Of course it is. It's a great metaphor.
Sort of dead.
I mean, it's exactly why Caitlyn Jenner got so much backlash, was because she ended up being too good.
Except she crashed a car and killed someone, and now no one
except
cares anymore.
That.
It's true of anybody in the public eye.
They crash cars and kill people?
Yes.
Justin Bieber.
There's a lot of people where, like, you just look through their past, it's like, the fuck? But nobody cares.
Fuck that Patrick Chapin guy.
Who killed Paul Walker?
Society.
Good to keep this nerve.
Yes.
I always thought that was interesting, because people would always bring that up with Caitlyn Jenner, and I'm like, you do that with all of your celebrities, and you're just using that as an excuse, but whatever.
The reason she ended up being, like, she was edgy, and the reason that she was PC was because she ended up being so acceptable looking. It's the only reason that she fit in and people were okay with it. Which is why it's also, it's simultaneously exciting and frustrating at the same time, and that's the issue with it. It's the exact same issue that brought up with the new Zoolander movie, in the fact that the transgender community was uncomfortable with the fact that they made someone who didn't look good being transgender, someone who was non-gendered, which is like an area that people don't like talking about, and it is just like this frustrating cluster of opinions that I just, ugh.
I mean, I land more on the screw trying to fit into societal norms side, but.
And I think that's the whole point of a lot of the movements, is screw societal norms, do what you want, but.
And in doing so, you'll change
it gets
societal
lost
norms.
By this, it gets lost a lot by the public eye, I think.
I'm okay with whatever apocalypse awaits me. I just want something to happen. I'm so bored.